Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Friday, and it is a Jim Dandy Friday here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, almost level, and maybe not so level as it might otherwise be, Virginia. Yeah, we got some celebrating to do tonight, brothers and sisters. We most assuredly do. I got me an ice-cold peach soda here to celebrate with. That's peach soda, not watermelon. And Ferg and I have already clinked bottles. Why? Because we have reason to celebrate here in the hills and hollers. Because we've got a new lease on life. Appalachia does. Stunning word out from the Environmental Protection Agency earlier today. A hold has been placed on 79 mountain removal permit applications. Word has been transmitted from the Environmental Protection Agency to the Army Corps of Engineers that the permits that the Army Corps issued failed to adequately address the downstream toxicity and the permanent damage that mountain removal generates, not just in Appalachia, but for all of us. It's a happy day. A 14-day comment period opens now. I encourage you to go to ilovemountains.org and In particular, there's a section there, and it's ilovemountains.org/EPA-permit-list. ilovemountains.org/EPA-permit-list. And you can use the tool there to keep up with the mountain removal sites that may just cease to exist. However, it's only fair to warn you that this is there's a 14-day comment period. We need all the comments we can get from you to the EPA telling them this is the right thing to do, that America doesn't have to sacrifice an entire region of the country and the people, more importantly, the people who live there, in order to have so-called cheap electricity, because the electricity is most assuredly not cheap. We need your comments. You have 14 days, beginning now. This is a part of, well, this is one of those days when I remember all the people who have been so intimately involved with this fight, some who have even gone on this seemingly endless struggle to save our region. And we are not out of the woods yet, but we have reason to celebrate. It is a beautiful, beautiful late summer evening here in Appalachia. Were it not for the fact that I wanted to share this wonderful news with you, I really would be on the front porch. I really would have my feet propped up. And I don't know but what I'd have a bottle of champagne open. Because if the administration sticks to its guns and doesn't let itself be shoved around by the coal whores and their bought and paid for politicians, you know, the ones that are actually supposed to be representing us but represent coal companies instead, we won't bother with names. If the administration sticks to its guns, Appalachia has a fighting chance to try to come back from everything that has been done to us and try to rebuild a future Appalachia that will not be toxic or will be less toxic. We have a chance, but we need you. We need you badly. We need you desperately. We need you commenting during that 14-day comment period to the Environmental Protection Agency. We need you talking to your elected representatives, telling them that, okay, the administration has done its part. Now we've got to get H.R. 1310 and S-696 passed so that we can end this once and for all and start treating Appalachian people like fully enfranchised citizens of the United States of America. Celebrate, brothers and sisters, celebrate. We are one step closer to victory. We have a chance. Yeah, I agree, Cobwebs. I'll just try to help me keep this in the forefront of things this evening. That peach soda is pretty good. I don't drink a lot of soda. This was a way of celebrating. Parson Brown came and went from the chat room. Stick around for a little while, Parson. This is a day for smiling. This is a day for celebrating the good work of the Topless America Project, the good work of Coal River Mountain Watch, the good work of the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, the good work of Appalachian Voices, the good work of the Alliance for Appalachia. This is a day for celebrating good work. So that sort of had to lead the story. And you know what? I want to thank everyone. I want to thank everyone in the Horn family who joined in this celebration the minute that the news broke. I heard from so many of you saying, Bob, we're winning. This is huge, Bob. And it is. And I'm so glad that you are plugged into this issue, because it provides more hope to people in Appalachia. Because we're talking about people who are far, far from Appalachia. People from New England. People from the metropolitan New York area. People from the West Coast. People from the Great Northwest. People from the Great Midwest. People from the Deep South. All have written emails to me saying, Bob, it's happening! And it is. And it's happening because of you. Coal River Mountain Watch has done, as I've said every night, heroic work. And part of that heroic work has been helping to keep, alongside you, helping to keep the horn going month in and month out. And helping to spread the message. And you are the living proof of the resonance of that message. And you are the part of this that has been the most profound change agent. Be the change you wish to see. You have been. And we must continue to be. As I said, it's not over. Things could go sideways. We need intense comment over the next 14 days. And then we have to start thinking about winning the peace. If we win this, if these are stopped, we have to start thinking about winning the peace, because no mountain removal company is ever going to do adequate reclamation in Appalachia. Anyone who saw video from the Hate Fest on this Monday past, Labor Day, down at Holden, West Virginia, knows that, I mean, it, all the journalists.
The hate fest was held on a reclaimed mountain.
Pardon me, little Timmy, little Cindy, horseshit. That was no reclaimed mountain because there's no mountain there. That was a dead place that will remain dead for thousands of years. So we still have work to do, and Appalachia must be saved. And though he is no longer in the government, I still do hold close in my heart the words of Van Jones when he said, "We will turn Appalachia from a sacrifice zone to a sacred zone." And we can do that, and you have been such a huge part of that. It is, of course, Friday on the front porch on the horn, figuratively speaking. And I encourage you to join in and be part of that process. Just mosey on up to the front porch, get yourself a cold long neck out of the wash tub over there. You'll see the caps just sticking out above the ice. Those little opaque things. That's rock salt we put on the ice to make the ice even colder, and make the long necks even colder by extension. If that's not your gig, maybe a glass of sweet iced tea, lemon or no lemon. It's your call. Let's have our Friday conversation though. And you know what? There's all kinds of different places to go this evening. I was a little bit late. Well, no. Okay, update, because, you know, I was away from the microphone last night for the follow-up to President Obama's speech, and more particularly, pig-licking, walking piece of human excrement Joe Wilson and his outburst, for which he has issued, typically, a non-apology apology. He apologized quickly and then said, And then immediately backed off his apology. But I wasn't here to talk about all of that last night. I was at Ferg's football game, at which Doodle is a member of the cheer squad as well. And I have to tell you, we went down in defeat, 22-20, in literally the waning seconds of the game. It was a well-played game. Well, it was a hard-played game, and Ferg did well. He got himself a handful of tackles, and he also found some places where we need to do some work and do some learning. That's what this is all about. It's a learning curve. Of course, I don't know that any sport ever stops having a learning curve and goes to straight horizontal. I don't think it does. But we had a tough loss yesterday, and he's psyched to put one in the win column now. That was one of the things that came out of this. He's no longer ambivalent about winning or losing. Losing sucks. Or at least that's what he said. So that's what, you know, that's where I was yesterday evening. But I have here just briefly the audio of Representative Joe Wilson. You've heard it a million times before, but I just want to point something out to you real quick. So stick around. Let's see. Here we go. And by the way, for future reference, little Timmy and little Susie probably need to leave the room for just a little bit. Might be some fun words coming up. This is the Internet. We don't have to worry about the Federal Censorship Commission. Now, these are not words that I'm going to use, but they are probably going to appear in the program. So my apologies in advance, and hustle little Timmy and little Cindy out of the room. Anyway, this is the moment from the speech Wednesday evening. Okay, the you lie, but then did you hear the gang of juvenile delinquents in the Congress? Ooh, he called you, and you know what that's all afraid of. Everybody who's been through middle school knows that sound. Ooh, he called you out. What are you going to do about it? Right? Ooh. You know, I kind of yearn for the early days of the 19th century because that's the moment where Barack Obama could have walked off the podium, gone and slapped that son of a bitch Joe Wilson. Oh, I did use one, sorry. Until the spit flew, told him he would meet him on the plains of Weehawken the following morning, and gone out and just had done with this at the same time Aaron Burr was getting done with that miserable proto-Republican Alexander Hamilton. Nah, I better. Nah, I don't want that. Because the other side's got all the damn guns. But anyway, so, you know, after that schoolyard, I couldn't help wishing that Barack Obama could say what I hope legitimately was in Barack Obama's heart. Because I know the words have been in his mouth. I know he knows how to use them because I was provided with a link the other day with clips. ELO, Sue, chat room moderator, provided me with a link to a blog that has clips, real clips, of the audiobook Dreams from My Father. And President Obama, who was then maybe not even Senator Obama, did the voice work for Dreams from My Father himself. So this is not an Obama impersonator. This is an actual quote from the book as read by Barack Obama, and Lord God, would this not have been ever so appropriate Wednesday night?
Now, you know that guy ain't shit. Sorry ass motherfucker got nothing on me, right? Nothing.
Tell it, brother. Oh, that would have been nice. But instead, he just gave that icy glare. And we will have to take that for what it was. But now the right wing, of course, is all a titter about, what was the phrase I heard used? The Nancy Pelosi death stare. When she turned her head and looked to see who the weird-ass right-wing, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freak was who screamed, "You lie!" Of course, and no surprise, and I don't think I'm insulting anybody from there. Lord knows I don't think I'm insulting our dear friend David from South Carolina by noting that this guy is, of course, from South Carolina. This guy, Representative Joe Wilson, Repiglicking from South Carolina, is of the same mindset that caused, and this guy had his own issues, Lord knows, we've talked about them, but caused way back in the early mid-19th century, caused Andrew Jackson to say, if I hear another word of secession coming out of South Carolina, I'm going to get on my horse, and I'm going to ride to South Carolina, and I'm going to fight, and the first secessionist I see, I'm going to hang him, and I'm going to get back on my horse, and I'm going to ride till I find me another secessionist, I'm going to hang him too. Then when we get back on my horse, I'm going to keep hanging secessionists till there ain't no secessionists in South Carolina no more. Hey, Abraham Lincoln, that was Andrew Jackson. You'll recall that South Carolina was the reason that the language regarding slavery was excised from the Declaration of Independence, because the hot-headed, lily-white, pro-slavery zealots from South Carolina refused to sign on to the Declaration of Independence. They would, in other words, they would have rather remained under the yoke of the King of England than admit that persons of darker skin color were as human as them. They. Damn, grammar gets in the way of a nice piece of rhetoric. But it's true. And it continues to this day. And it's one of the reasons that I can have some sympathy with folks who call in from time to time and say, hey, maybe it's time to let them go. Goodbye! You know, I'd miss Myrtle Beach. Yeah, I'd miss Hilton Head. I'd miss shag music. I'd miss shrimp and grits. I'd miss low country cooking in general. But when your state does nothing but try everything in its power to dissolve the union, sometimes it's better to cut the cancer out, isn't it? I mean, does that argument not at least exist? Yeah. So I couldn't help noticing the schoolyard quality of the, ooh, he called you out, what you gonna do? Because, I mean, I've heard that a million times over. I do remember. I remember middle school. I remember what we called junior high school. So the fact of the matter is, given the good news coming out of the EPA today, it would be very, very easy to not be here, to just be celebrating. Get in the car and drive somewhere and find some of my comrades and colleagues and clink a few glasses and celebrate what looks like might be a victory for a change. And a big one at that, a significant one. Or maybe just, well, now this is not a product plug, and in fact it's rather embarrassing, but I was watching one of the college football games last weekend, and I guess Jimmy Buffett has gone into the blender business. The Margaritaville frozen concoction machine. It's a blender that shaves the ice first, hoppers the ice into the blender. You put your liquids in, and boom, frozen concoction that helps you hang on, hang on, hang on, hang on, if you recall the live version. And I think the thing's about $350 because it comes with a battery pack that's good for like 70 power blends. That would be just a little embarrassing. Yeah, it's a nice blender you got there. Yeah, it cost me $350. Yeah, you're a moron. But I guess Jimmy's been working on marketing all his life. And because he's been thinking about that battery-powered blender for a long time. So we'll take a little break. You can light the phones up if you want. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Direct dial if you want to save us a nickel or a buck is 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. It's all just that easy. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. A great way you can support America's listener-supported liberal voice is by going to headonradionetwork.com and ordering one, especially on a day like this. What a day to commemorate. And you'll always remember, this was the day I bought, for the love of Appalachia, hand-printed at the Horn site, the day that the EPA stepped in and decided to start protecting the environment. It's easy to do, $75, and it's something you'll be so very glad you did. Get them while we've got them. It's very much a finite thing. So we'll take a little break, a little Jimmy on a Friday. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
I never got a grip on penmanship. Could never make the small L's flow. Seldom found the trick to arithmetic. 3 + 2 = 4. But ask for some palm trees or tales from the South Seas, and I just might turn your head. I never had the clouds to knock one out, but hitting was the name of my game. On third as the coaches confer, close to my first claim to fame. Just give me the steel sign and I'll make home late in mind, and I just might turn something. Sometimes I may I just let my feelings show. years he's been plugged into blenders and songs. They call him the 12-volt man. He don't need no charge card. Just give him a diehard, and he'll make sparks fly around your head.
Yeah, so you see why I chose that. I gotta admit, it's probably not worth the 300 or umpty bajillion dollars that the thing costs, but it would be cool at a moment like this when you want to do some celebrating and you want to just maybe go sit. And... yeah, that's right. That's what we want. We want nature offended by the sound of a whirling blender. But, you know, it'd be nice to go sit down by a stream, a babbling brook, and fire up some frozen concoctions to help you hang on. But not for that kind of money. No, no. Not when we're busy trying to keep a cotton picking radio network alive. But anyway, just a little fun for a Friday. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Gene, what's up?
Oh, not much. I'm kind of working on an ad, but I gotta say, as much as I kind of agree with you. Like, gee, I would really like to see the guys just kind of go on and all that jazz. I can't do it because, you see, they'd go ahead and they'd leave, and then somebody else would come in, and they'd be right back up here. And we still wouldn't get Hilton Head and the good parts of South Carolina, but we'd have them.
Well, right, yeah, because somebody's gonna keep peeing in the Wheaties. I understand.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I believe.
But I get so tired of seeing that it's it's the usual suspects every time, Gene. You know, hey, where is he from? And you know, he's either from Georgia, Texas, Alabama, or South Carolina, with an occasional foray into Oklahoma, Idaho, or Minnesota even.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I probably shouldn't speak for, I know these guys, well, I kind of know these guys. I actually, the night of Obama's speech, I stayed home, but I just stayed home because I was all set to go to Cascadia Commons meeting, and those guys are kind of, I guess I'd call them autonomous, in the sense they're not quite secessionists, but they're just kind of that. They want to have a little economic, and I can't blame them for that. Economic autonomy is great. I couldn't do it because, well, basically the weather looked like it was going to turn, and it was way into Portland, and it was just crazy as far as what I thought the weather was going to be. I didn't know where it was going, so I stayed home and watched the speech, which sounded awful good, but again, it sounded, and I don't
hear a note of skepticism in your voice, do I, Gene? that couldn't possibly be.
No. Everything is just going to be perfect, you know. Everybody else will take care of it. We don't need to worry. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Dave. You can't have a public option.
Oh, yeah? No, I'm sorry, Dave. You can't have Medicare negotiating lower drug prices. I'm sorry. Oh, God, I hit that word. No, I always said I said that word way too much, and now I understand why. So, anyway, well, I just had to chime in because I missed you. You know, it was good. I'm sure it was good to see the boys' football game and so on. Oh, and I wanted to ask you one other thing.
Sure.
I woke up this morning and was thinking about, basically the Supreme Court thing with the United, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
Americans United? The speech.
Yes.
Corporate speech case. And, I was thinking, I mean, should we think about and I know we talked about the Larry Flint piece a few weeks back, but should we think about a media boycott? I mean, and here's what I mean. I mean, basically just kind of, you know, stop, you know, let your cable go, you know, disconnect your cable and let it just go away. And, I mean, sure, I mean, Rupert might be able to fund Fox, but let's see him fund Comcast or some other cable company and see how long that gets you. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I just wonder if, considering the success that has been had in running, or at least, you know, I don't consider it running anybody away from it. Just considering the success that has been had in forming these corporate marketing departments of exactly what's going on these programs that they're sponsoring and watching the money go away there, that's the direct, it may seem indirect to you, Gene, but that's the most direct form of action because, of course, the for-profit media are for-profit, and when corporate America steps away from the likes of Glenn Beck, you know, Glenn Beck goes away eventually. I mean, the other reason to clink some glasses, and I got this in the email from you today. The other reason to clink some glasses today is that the flagship station that carries the Savage Wiener out in San Francisco has said goodbye, Mike.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
That is nice. I'm just, you know, thinking about the political campaigns and political commercials that are going to come on there, and in that case, is boycotting sponsors or making sponsors boycott whatever going to work? And I'm not sure that it is, but then these are just things that are bumping around in my head. So, you know, you're the media guy. You're the media guy, so I thought I'd throw it out there and see what you thought. I mean,
sure. And consider, you know, what I was talking about by going after the money. That's what was done to Savage, too, the Savage Wiener. Union Bank of California pulled away. ITT Technical Institute pulled away from him. GEICO pulled away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, KNEW in the Bay Area, Talk 910. This is Talk 910, KNEW. Sorry, I just have to do that kind of thing.
That's okay.
They have issued a statement. I love this. The rep from the station said, I'm going to answer the very first question many of you have. Why did you take Michael Savage off the air? Here's your no-spin direct answer. We have decided to go in a different philosophical and ideological direction featuring more contemporary content and more local information. The Savage Nation does not fit into that vision. In other words, we're going to try to get our advertisers back. This little bastard's costing us money.
Yeah, that's always the key. We got to make sure it costs them as much as it costs us.
What's interesting, however, is that this is, of course, his flagship station, Gene.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for most people who don't happen to have fabulous radio studios in their mansion like we do here at the Kincaid Estate, that means that's the place that Michael Savage gets up and goes to work to every day. That means he's got to find a new flagship. That means he's got to find somewhere that will let him sit his lard ass in a chair and do his show.
Well,
Now, I don't know. He may have a home studio. He may have a Southern Command, sort of like that 24,000-square-foot mansion with a cat that Flush Flemball has in West Palm, Florida.
Uh-huh.
But ordinarily, a flagship station is the station that originates the programming.
Just have to see how that goes. It would be very, very nice. I mean, if there's a bunch of reruns for the next couple of months, maybe he's finally gone. But, I mean, I just, I think the country's mood is changing. I just hope we can keep it up so that the chain's thick. We got to have that chain thick. Anyway, I'll let you go because I'm sure there are plenty of other people that want to call in. Hi, everybody. It's good to hear from you. I'll be in the chat soon. Bye.
All right. See you, Gene. Bye now. News Ninja Gene, the man who reads the Internet, the whole Internet, every day. Sometimes it really does seem like that. I get so much good stuff from Gene, including the, you know, I was sitting there going, woo, about the mountaintop removal thing. It's not often I get two woo in a day. But I get the mountaintop removal news from EPA, and then I get this thing from Gene that says the Savage Wiener has lost his flagship station. Dang, it'll be a miracle if I'm still sober by nine. Nah, I'm kidding. I don't do that behind the air. I leave that to the right wing blatherheads. But you can understand what I mean by that. Good news and good news on a Friday and two of them. Woot, you know. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Tell Gene hello.
I think you just did.
Okay. Before I forget, tomorrow they're having a tea party in Washington, D.C. It's going to be on C-SPAN.
Oh.
I wanted you to know. You had too much good news. No.
Oh, no. You mean that Glenn Beck affair?
I don't know. I think they said they were different. I don't know, but they got people. There's going to be thousands of people from all over the country. No, nonpartisan, ha-ha. They had some guy on the Journal this morning, and I said I think he looked like what they have for the recruiters for the Ku Klux Klan now, you know, those smooth-talking guys that don't say anything of substance, that, you know. But anyway, I just thought you ought to know about that.
It will be.
I thought I might watch it maybe. It's supposed to be on about noon. I don't know.
I
can take it that long.
Well, you know, Glenn Beck is hosting live team coverage.
Well, maybe that's the same one, but he said he wasn't connected with him. And somebody asked him where the money came from, and he said, well, I can't divulge that. And, The host said, do you have to disclose it? Like, I guess he meant to IRS, and he said no. But, yeah, he was one of those, you know, like you see a movie, you know, where they're recruiting all these people, and they're really smooth talking. They're not like the ones that used to, like, rabble rouse.
No, no, we just want to stand up for the white people.
You sound a lot like that guy. I'd never heard of him before, but
no. Well, that's their pretty new face.
Yeah. But and then the View is back. You know, they were gone for at least 3 weeks.
Oh, I know.
Huh?
No, I said I'd heard that they were on hiatus, so they came back today.
Elizabeth had her, well, they got back Tuesday. Elizabeth had her baby.
Poor baby.
Anyway, today they had.
Can you imagine having to be a baby and growing up and have that thing for your mama?
Yeah.
Now here, honey, this strychnine won't kill you. Hold this snake. It's just a little garter snake till you get a little older. Then we'll hand you the cotton mouth.
But they had Rudolph Giuliani on today, you know, for all the fine things that he did on
including screwing up the radio system. Thanks, Rudy.
Yeah, and he had his wife there with him, and of course he was, you know, he's
which one
thinking about running for governor? The one that while he was still governor, and he is not governor, but mayor, and his wife, you know, wouldn't let her move into the mansion because she
right.
was living there. Remember that?
Oh, that was precious.
But anyway, she was there, and he was saying,
you are not bringing that home-wrecking tramp into the Gracie Mansion.
but he was saying that Obama was ruining our nation. I mean, he had the same old Republican line, like all of them say. But then he was talking about, oh, they were talking about his wife. She was in the audience. And he said, oh, she's just so great, you know, and said, she really helped me out when I had prostate cancer. And, you know, she's a nurse and all. And I like what Joy said. Joy got a little digging on him, and she said, well, wasn't it great that you had good insurance? He said, oh, yeah. And Wubba was telling him that when she was, you know, first starting out on her own and had a little family, that she said, I was on welfare, so they took good care of me. And she said, he was talking about, you know, how they're talking about giving money so you can buy your own insurance, and that's been around for forever. And she said, don't you think people deserve to be taken care of and all? And, of course, you know, that was beyond him. But anyway, I was thinking about how, you know, there's so many of them now that they talk about, oh, I'm going to lose my insurance and I'm blah, blah, you know, all that kind of stuff they say. And I think about, and that I won't be able to go to my doctor. Well, we can't go to our doctor. We want to down here. I mean, if they come to Florida, I don't think anywhere in Florida that you can go to just any doctors. You got to go, if you do have insurance, you got to go where they say you can go. And you got to get permission to go to a specialist. I know when I broke my arm and I was treated in the emergency room, they had a doctor here where I live, but he couldn't see me right away. So I had to go out of town. It wasn't that they didn't have other doctors here that did that, but that was the only one they had where I lived. And I wanted to tell you again about that $100 deal I had on this doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, the whole bill altogether was $140 for something that would have cost, if I'd have paid cash, just totally $20. And I called the insurance company, the one I have, like a, I guess you call it HMO. It's the Medicare HMO.
Right, right.
And I have, I called them because I keep getting bills, and I thought, well, I don't want to call and talk to somebody that's just working there because that's not their fault. But anyway, I called. They said it was still under investigation, so I don't know. But, it was just $100. It was $100 for what the doctor charged. Supposedly, I saw the doctor, you know. But anyhow, that's beside the point. But you can't go to just, and most of the doctors that I can go to, as far as specialists, are in another town. They're not in my town. I used to work at another place. Last job I had, and they had insurance. I couldn't afford it because it cost more than I made. And, like the head nurse there, she got real sick. She had to go like 50 miles away to a hospital for the insurance because the insurance wouldn't cover any other local hospitals. But, I don't know where all these people got all this great insurance and all that. You know, I haven't seen any really great insurances in years.
Well, I don't know. Were you listening? I guess it was Wednesday night when Robert called from Japan, now that he's back home.
No, I missed Wednesday.
Well, that's where he underwent the procedure, a nephrectomy, so that he could donate a kidney to his sister.
Oh.
And he said he was on a part of the floor, in a part of the hospital, and I guess it was Tampa General, if memory serves me correctly.
I remember that.
And he said the whole blessed thing was just about, was empty except for him. And he said, where's everybody? And they said, well, nobody's coming to the hospital anymore. They can't afford to.
Yeah. And that was Tampa General? Wow. That's a big hospital.
I think it was Tampa General, if I recall correctly. And
yeah.
And you know, the point being, it's not that everybody's suddenly gotten well and quit going to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
It's that people aren't going to the hospital because they can't.
Right. Well, I think they need to go back to the way it was, you know, before 1980. But, you know, those abbreviations I was trying to think about, one is the DRG. I think that's for the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hospital. And the CRT is for the other. You know, those codes that they use?
Yeah, yeah.
And people get paid good money for those things, for knowing how to finagle that, as you know, for what it is, you know, in the area that you would call good money. It might not be good money somewhere else, but down here it would be good. You know, I would have loved to have been able to make that kind of money, but of course you have to have a type of degree, and
yeah, you've got to be certified in that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and anyway, it's not like some people would think of as making a lot of money, but for these parts, you know, considering what minimum wage and all like that has been.
Yeah, that's not chicken feed.
No, no, and you know, the way of the cost and everything, but I never did get up that high. Because something's always happening, and I was always get sick, or somebody didn't like me on the job, and I'd have to find another job, or whatever. You know, you're just at the mercy of people. That's why I like being on Medicare, because, and they keep threatening to take that away from us, but, you know, if they do, what can you do? But, anyway.
Well, I don't think the Repiglicans are even stupid enough to actually kill Medicare. Although you gotta wonder, Juanita, because among other things, what was it that I saw? These 10th Amendment freaks, who think that the 10th Amendment prevents things like, you know, government road building programs and Medicare and so forth. Now the governor of Minnesota is sort of, playing footsie with the idea of along with people like Piyush Jindal and that Appalachian Trail hiker Mark Sanford and, you know, the rest of those right-wing governating pig-licking freaks trying to get legislation through their individual several states saying that if some form of public option should come along, that their state will forbid their citizens from participating in it. Wow. On the one hand, they say that government too big. On the other hand, it's not too big if it can do their bidding in their own little weird little right-wing states.
Well, you know, I've decided that, number one, they don't love their country because they don't love what America is supposed to stand for, the United States is supposed to stand for. We're supposed to stand for individual freedom, I thought. And they don't. I mean, what my concept of our country is supposed to be, they don't believe in it.
Whole promote the general welfare part of the Constitution? Yeah, that's there. It doesn't really call for any believing. It's really, really in the Constitution, but they just keep trying to wish it away.
I'm talking about they want to have religion, and they used to talk about the Catholics. And you go back in history, but see, they don't believe in history. You go back in history and what the Catholic Church did years ago, and that's exactly what they're wanting to do. They would have, if they get a chance, they will have the Inquisition. I guarantee you.
They'd like nothing better.
Yeah. And, anyway, that guy that called, Obama a liar.
Yeah, by the way, go ahead. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Him.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to tell you, he's kind of like Samuel Wurzelbacher Beaker Booger, that guy that calls himself Joe, because Representative Joe Wilson.
Yeah.
I mean, what is it with these Repiglicans and their aliases? You got Sam Weaselbooger Beckerbucker, and calling himself Joe, and you got
really?
Piyush Jindal calling himself Bobby.
Oh, yeah.
And now it turns out that Representative Joe Wilson's name ain't Joe.
What is it?
It's Addison. His real name is Addison Graves Wilson.
Ooh. Well, isn't he the one...
Where do you get Joe out of that?
I don't know. Isn't he the one that every time he gets up to speak, he always ends it, and I shall never forget 9/11?
That I don't know.
It's either him or somebody from Georgia that sounds just like him.
I do know that he's a member of the Sons of the Confederate Veterans. And the Sons of the Confederate Veterans has been taken over in recent years, of course, by neo-Confederates, secessionists, and slavery apologists. That's the group that Joe, otherwise known as Addison Graves Wilson, you know, things like C-SPAN, they put Congress Representative Joe Wilson. Do facts not even matter a little bit anymore, Juanita? I mean, just a smidgen?
Well, see, they're Republicans, Bob. We must remember that. And, you know, Sanford, he said, God made us imperfect, and he understands the mistakes that we make. You know, of course, they're special. The family, they're special.
Oh, yes, they are. God likes them better.
Oh, yeah.
Just ask them, they'll tell
and
you.
He understands their, you know, when they're, don't, you know, because he made them imperfect. Well, according to the Bible, he made them perfect.
You know.
But that's another thing. I don't think they really, I don't think they love God because they sure don't love what he's supposed to have made. They say that he made it, and they don't love it because they don't care if it's destroyed. That's the conclusion I've come to. So I don't know what they are. I don't know what they think they are.
Nor do I. I mean, you've opened up a sort of definitional can of worms. And of course,
okay. I've thought about a lot about it this past couple of weeks. It's kind of, I got to thinking about it, and they don't love, they claim they're Christians, but they don't love God, or they don't, because they don't love what they say is his creation. Because they don't mind destroying it.
Of course, that's because they say he told them they could.
Yeah,
that's why they're dominionists.
Yeah, not us, you know. But it's funny, the arrogance of saying, you know, well, they know more than science, they know more than this, you know. And actually, the Bible's not a book of science, as I understand it. I don't know the whole kit and caboodle.
Well, but they think it is.
But, you know, It's not science. It's not set up to be science. I don't know. But anyway, that's my little jig, I guess. I really did like Obama's speech. What did you think about it?
Think
we can believe it?
I almost feel like I need to stand silent on it, Juanita, because, I liked it. It was a great speech.
Yeah.
But by the same token, it reminds me of, and this may seem a little obscure and really sort of tangential, but in Shakespeare's Henry V, there is a scene that takes place in the French court, in the French camp, the night before the Battle of Agincourt,
mm-hmm.
in which the Dauphin, who is the Crown Prince of France, is standing there, and he is proclaiming, I have an excellent horse. It is the best horse in the entire army. There is no horse like my horse when it comes to nobility of breeding. And finally, sick of all this, the Marshal of France says, yes, It is indeed an excellent horse. And that's the kind of the way I feel about what went down Wednesday. It was a great speech.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's see some actions behind them.
Yeah.
And I guess I made a couple of listeners angry talking that way. But I'm tired of talk. I mean, silly as it may seem for somebody who does conversation radio, that's what, we talk, we process, we dialogue. That's okay. But the other side is again, it was a great speech, but there were moments in it, Juanita, where I went, ew! Because when Barack Obama, President Obama, said, we will take the best ideas of the Republicans and the best ideas of the Democrats, and we will put together a program that will work for all America, or something like that. I had to kick furniture. Because there is no such thing as a good idea on health care from the Republicans, because they've shown Juanita time and time and time and time again that their best idea for health care for America is to make sure that Americans keep dying for want of health care.
Well, I think we've been kicked around so much. We keep on, I guess we're eternal optimists or whatever, and we just keep on, and then something good comes along, and we have to hang on to something for a while. But you know what I thought about when he was talking about the letter that he got from Kennedy, that I don't know if it was Kennedy wrote it or he just said it about with the way we treated our people, that needed help. How did he say that about it showed the character of our country?
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I couldn't help but think about was what about the torture?
Yeah.
I did. I couldn't help but think that what kind of character is that showing about our country? And nothing's been, Dick Cheney flaunts it. He flaunts it.
Yeah, he does. And so, proud of it. And everything that you're talking about, of course, stems from that line in Matthew where the Yeshua says, if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me.
Oh, that made me think. One more thing I've been thinking about. Okay. Now, they approved the torture.
Right.
And they're supposed to, I don't think Shane's ever said he was a Christian, but the rest of them, they're supposed to be Christians. And the Republicans, they're supposed to be Christians, and they say, yes, we should have the kind of torture that we have, Isn't that basically what they say?
Thereabouts.
Okay. Now, what about the people that they had to do the dirty work? Do they consider them Christians? Are they Christians? Okay. Now, they believe, it's gotten ridiculous what they believe about the rapture. About they'll be taken and all the clothes that be left.
Well, no, there's
Now,
wait, Juanita. There is a significant dogmatic split. Some people are going to rapture naked.
Well, if all your clothes fall off, aren't you naked?
Yeah, but
that's what I asked my right wing friend.
But some people,
did Jesus go up without his clothes?
But some people are going to rapture fully clothed, just like Jesus.
Well. That's what I heard, That was, that other was new to me recently about the nakedness, about the no clothing. And I thought about, okay, now, do they think that if they're in the middle of watching those films and they're supposed to be Christians, and I think that George Bush did watch those films, I think that was his jolly times. Among other things.
Yeah, the same way that he joked about the execution of Carla Faye Tucker. Yeah, he's a psychopath.
And Okay, all of them that are supposed to be Christians, do they think they're actually going to make it to the rapture doing stuff while they're doing stuff like that, and all their stuff is going to be left behind? All their
well, the short answer is yes, but by the way, just so you'll know, I saw a website the other day. Our good friend Maura sent it along. There is a website out there for pet care for people after the rapture. You know, when their beloved puppies and kitties don't get to go with them up to see Jesus in the clouds.
Well, why can't their animals go with them?
Oh, no, because they don't have souls.
Well, I know, Pat Robertson said there weren't any animals in the heaven. Well, the Bible talks about it. Now, I'm talking about people that are supposed to believe all that.
Yeah, I know.
And it does, you know, and they're pure. The only trouble with them is us, you know.
Yeah,
because
we keep putting a stick in their spokes.
But, I mean, what they do, you know, like killing and all, that's their nature. But we're supposed to have a better nature than that, so-called. But, you know, it's just like up is down and wide is narrow, you know.
Yeah.
There's no...
Crazy is sane, yeah.
And anyway, I come out of a lot of that, you know, I had to get away from it. I couldn't take it. And I remember years ago there was a woman out here that she did prayers, and she was, you could tell she was really a special person. And she told me, she said, don't ever go to church where they don't preach the real word of God. She said, many times I don't go to church. And I thought about, you know, they try to make you feel guilty when you are in the church about not going. But I just said, okay, you know, I'm right or I'm wrong, whatever. I can't take all this stuff anymore. It isn't just some of the phony teachings. It's all the crazy politics.
Don't forget the outright meanness.
Well, that too.
Because they got that in abundance.
Oh, yeah. They will kill their own if you make one little slip, considered by them to be a slip. It's just like...
not a slip. To them, they get to call it heresy.
Yeah.
And for them, it's okay to, you know, do whatever you have to do to eliminate the heresy. I mean, just say it.
Oh, yeah, well, just like that guy from Blackwater.
Well, just like the family, you know, just like John Ensign, just like Mark Sanford, just like that creep from, Mississippi, on and on and on and on. Hey, Juanita, I got to roll along, dear, but it's been a wonderful evening and a wonderful conversation.
And
Don't hesitate.
I didn't know Ferg was able to play.
It turned out the orthopod examined him and said, no, this is not a break.
Good.
He said on the x-ray that was a growth plate and not a fracture. But he said there's ligament damage, so we're just wrapping him up and padding him real good because there was no way he was not going to play.
Good. Well, he's a regular football player.
I reckon he is. And getting better every game, getting better every practice.
Good. Okay.
Well, don't hesitate to turn away from that teabagging business if you watch it on C-SPAN tomorrow. I imagine you'll get a belly full.
How many people shows up? Oh, they're picking them up by the busloads. They're picking them up.
Well, yeah, they've got a humongous corporate sponsor, Juanita, or sponsors. They got lots of corporate sponsors, and they will be bussing them in like wildfire.
Yeah. It's supposed to be the biggest thing for them.
Yeah, because they're going to take their country back. Yeah, because you know because it's not our country, it's their country, and you know that one's in the Oval Office.
But I'm tired of them telling us to leave the country. I think they should leave because they don't like democracy or republican or whatever. Whatever we're supposed to be, we're supposed to be a democratic republic, aren't we?
Yeah, a republic founded on democratic principles.
Yeah, and they don't like that. So So how can they say they love the country? They don't love the country.
No, they don't.
You know, if you love your child, you're going to discipline your child.
That's true.
And
you won't let them sit there and lick their finger and repeatedly stick it in the wall socket.
Yeah. And that's basically what they want our country to do. My country, right or wrong. Remember that?
No mercy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good night, Bob.
Take care, Juanita. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And rolling onward, we are at the top of the hour, but we'll just keep it cooking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Gary. How you doing?
Hey, Gary, what's up?
Not much. You know, I was, I got a call, Bob, because I said that, hope he's, I was just thinking about that. I hope Bob ain't mad at me.
Oh, heck no. No. Why would I get mad?
Yeah. Well, we always have some different point of views on things.
Yeah, but that's not cause for anger. I mean, this ain't right wing radio, brother.
You know, I was just thinking, Juanita, sometimes when I listen, if I can catch a rebroadcast, I was thinking, she's like the perfect index to your show. Because it's like, if I hear a show, one of your shows, and I don't hear her like early on, I don't feel like this show was like right. Like she sets she sets everything in motion. for the topics and things.
She does, and her observations are so basic and so honest. And what she says about Republicans is so true, Gary. All this love that they profess for the country, and then everything that they do is contrary to anything that anyone who loved this country would do.
She's a Christian woman.
She is.
Got love in her heart. God bless her.
Well, yeah, the message got through. That's the thing. There's a lot of people sitting in pews, Gary, that the message don't get through.
Yeah, according to the Bible, the church is over. We're in the devil and took over the church. So, that's where I see it. That's my Christian point of view on it. I don't go to church rarely, if all, anymore. So I still read the Bible, of course, as a Christian. But in terms of, actively going, I just, I've seen the... I see the fraud in the churches, and so I don't. That's why I said.
I've said on a number of occasions, if there was a Unitarian Universalist congregation somewhere near me, I'd be there every Sunday morning. Just because I think they get it right.
I miss the singing though. I love it. Yeah.
Hey, they sing in the Unitarian Church.
Oh, okay.
Somebody bring it. I remember we went. Janice Neese and I went on a trip to tell some Unitarians up near Washington D.C. about mountaintop removal, and they had a little family came in, a couple of guitars and a mandolin, and I'm singing, and man, they were something good. And the rest of the congregation, good 100 people or so, got in there singing along too, and it was real nice. Music before, music after, music during. It was inspiring, truly inspiring.
Yeah, I had actually when I was calling, I was going to call and ask Juanita, actually ask you, what you thought of the speech, because when I called the other day, and I told you this, I'll be frank with you, I told you, I said, look, when we was going through the campaign, and everything, I said, there are times with me personally that, I told you, I said, look, I think sometimes when we're taking so much artillery from the other side, gotta be careful that we're not sending too much artillery back within our own camp. And I think it's good to criticize and whatever. But I think my concern was and it's not just, here on this program or anything. I've heard this on other shows just out talking to people. I just kind of feel like, it's almost like somebody called on Mike McBlow show. She said, this woman was perfect. She said, this is like the street vernacular, ride or die. Okay. We're in the car right now with Barack Obama. This is ride or die. Now, he may be driving in a direction for a few minutes that we don't like, but we stay in the car because it's ride or die. So we stay in the car because if you get out the car now, you can't influence the direction of, whatever. So if he goes in one direction and gets in the wrong way, then we can tell him, look, fool, you should have been going this way. But if we're not in the car, we can't put him way to go. And I just, when I hear people saying, well, I'm not going to vote for Democrats, so I'm jumping off ship. And I'm like, look, it's only, 8 months in, he hasn't done everything perfectly. But let's really look at what he had coming through. He had to deal with that economic stuff. he had to spend a lot of capital just putting that stimulus package through. Again, I'm not making excuses for him, but I'm just saying, you know, it's the same thing with...
No, no, I understand what, and you know what, something that I tried to make clear in our conversation the other night, Gary, is that you've got, you know, you got to look at Congress, too. You know, where's the Employee Free Choice Act? Why is the so-called climate bill, the clean energy legislation, why is that so chock-a-block with welfare for the worst of, and most toxic of the polluters? You know, where's the legislation that clearly and plainly restores habeas corpus to its rightful place in our country? Where is it? Where's the legislation that would make it absolutely unequivocally clear that
Was Harry Reid in charge of the employee? Wasn't that the thing he promised the labor unions? And it wasn't that really mainly his charge? Isn't that what he was supposed to be, pushing forward?
Well, it was. Yeah, I guess because it was a foregone conclusion it would get through the House. And so, you know, it fell to Harry Reid to make it happen in the Senate. And like I've said a million times, it was January the 21st, 2009. Guy James and me sitting in a room in the Russell Senate office building. And Harry Reid looked me in the eye and said, there will be a card check bill by summer. It's September, Gary.
And I guess that's where my point, you know, when I said the other night, that everybody's putting everything on Obama this and Obama that. My point being, that's what you're saying is my point, that we need to get broader in terms of, like, not just saying, well, it's Obama this and Obama this. The people who are stopping the public option are Democrats. It's not Barack Obama. He's already said a number of times that he's for it. Now, granted, he can push a little harder for it or whatever, but in the end, it's the moderate Democrats that are stopping it. They have enough of the votes. So it seems to me we should be putting pressure on them to do the right thing, but he's put Rahm Emanuel in charge of dealing with them because Rahm Emanuel put them in there. So,
and that's the thing that I'm not certain of, Gary. I'm not sure that Rahm Emanuel wants a public option because
he's a corporatist. I mean, he's a corporate Democrat. I mean, he's like from that
corporate. I mean, look, as I pointed out the other night, Kathleen Sebelius, Health and Human Services, which, of course, would administer any public option, has issued really, really sort of limp noodle, wishy-washy pronouncements about it. One day, yeah, I could live with it. Another, and now, you know, and what bothers me the most, Congress is responsible, under the way the Constitution is written, Congress is responsible for writing and passing legislation, and the president signs it, and it turns into law. But the president...
They can stop the Afghanistan war right now. Just stop funding it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be Obama's war. It's just, you know?
But by the same token, he has, whether you call it constitutional or just by tradition, he has the ability to lead and say, this is what I want and this is what I don't want. God knows the Bush administration did that without fail.
But I think that's the problem I've always had, and I think this is where I kind of depart. Look, I'm a dead left person. I'm not far left as maybe some of you guys are or whatever. I'm dead left. I'm not a moderate, but I'm definitely dead left. And my point is that in terms of like the things like Obama can do and cannot do, there's a certain amount of practicality to it, you know. Once those private contracts, say in Iraq, for example, or whatever, Afghanistan, once those contracts are drawn up, and I know because I have, you know, I'm living in D.C., I have family members who will, you know, work for the Department of Defense and everything else. Once those, that's why Bush was rushing so far to, you know, push those Halliburton, whatever those, Blackwater contracts through. You can't just go in there and revoke those because then it becomes a legal issue. You just have to wait and let those expire. So to some degree, I think we have to be careful not to try to put all of that on Obama. Some of that stuff, the same.
Right, thing. But Gary, how do you?
Contracts are already in place.
But Gary, how do you then deal with issues such as the ones that have arisen lately, where you know you've got a drawdown going on in Iraq and you've got the Obama administration actively recontracting? because that's not, you know, that's not fulfilling a previously entered into contract. I understand contract law a little bit. When you're entering into brand new contracts, how do you deal with that?
But do we know what the contracts are? I mean, you're saying they should just point blank drop all the contracts? I doubt they're going to do that.
No, these are brand new contracts for brand new Blackwater.
Yeah, but I'm saying is that, okay, but what are we saying? Are we saying that we're, for example, say if I'm using a Blackwater and just say, and rather than demonize the whole outfit, I'm not saying the whole outfit is bad. I don't know them that well. I mean, I read about them. I've read some stuff about them. I know that they have serious questions about the founder and everything else. But what I'm saying is that if those contractors are put in certain parameters, for example, like in the past where, you know, during the Bush, they couldn't be, you know, they had pretty much, you know, a free reign over in Iraq in terms of legal obligations. Now those new contracts, well, at least now we know they don't have that anymore. They can be persecuted under Iraqi law because that expired. So, and also I'm saying that maybe they have certain intel and intelligence where they just need to have some kind of backup. I'm not justifying it, but what I'm saying is that I don't know if it's the absolute situation where we can say, well, absolutely, you know, we just pull out of Afghanistan. Do we absolutely cancel all contracts? I'm saying maybe it does work in some instances.
Well, what you're seeing in Iraq is based on what I read, what you're seeing in Iraq is as there is a drawdown of U.S. military forces, there is a ramp up of private so-called contractors, otherwise known as mercenaries. And they're not being hired by the Iraqis. They're being hired by us.
And is that, let me ask you a question. So if, let's say this, you stabilize that situation with the private contract, then you just end the contract, then you're out of there. As opposed to a full military buildup.
But the problem is, I mean, if you're, everything's part of it, as long as we're talking about, you know, this thing's going to cost, what I heard said about the health care. You know, this is going to cost trillions of dollars over 10 years. And it was one of those jaw-dropping moments. I was like, yeah, and Iraq cost what? And we got what for it? If you're going to look at it from a fiscal standpoint, is what I'm saying, Gary, the contractors cost more than the Army does.
Yeah, but see, I understand it. But what I'm saying, this is my whole point with the Afghanistan thing. And I told you, I'm not really for that war. I mean, I'm before, but I'm just telling you from what I know from people, my family who are in the, you know, military, some who work for, you know, FBI, and when I have this conversation, they can't tell me obviously stuff, but you know, you have a conversation with people, you can kind of, they give you little things. And from what I understand, basically, from what I understand in this, is this situation really is this. We had Afghanistan where we wanted it to a couple years ago. And when Bush removed all that intel or whatever and got focused, They took away the core mission, the core mission that was working in Afghanistan, because they didn't have any logistical people really telling them any kind of direction, because they were so focused on Iraq that they lost ground, and because the Taliban was pretty much on lockdown, they had them, and just like they had Bin Laden at one point, you know. And for me personally, I think it was a scam. But the bottom line, what I'm saying is that we had Afghanistan solved. Now Barack Obama comes in, and it's a big mess again. And now he got to come in there.
Yeah, and listen, I'm enough of a paranoid, Gary, to sit here and say, and I have no doubt that that was a deliberate act.
No, it was a deliberate act. I can tell you point blank. I can tell you I know for sure, because I know people who dozed, and they were sitting back, you know, not necessarily friends of mine, but people I know who were like, they were just glad because they're getting contracts now. Oh, yes, no. It was definitely deliberate. The whole thing is about, you know, the Carlyle Group and everything else, and profits. That's all it was about. The war is about profit. Just like this healthcare stuff, it's all about money. That's all it's ever been about. But my point being, there are people who I know in my family, whoever, who are somewhere are pretty much up in the military, who were pissed off because they are there to really serve. And when they have an enemy, you know, a defeated, where they get up to go every day, they're going in there to win. They're trying to go to serve their country. The other thing that they have told me is that this, the problem with Afghanistan is that we have, I don't want to get into all this, but bottom line is we have agents that have gone rogue, people who have been converted, whatever you want to call them. We have CIA people who are there now who have been converted. They're not going to pull out because of that. That's just how it is. If Obama, all those Taliban, half of those guys were at some point involved in some kind of British intelligence or even American intelligence. Tell even Bin Laden was trained. That is really the main core why we're there. We have residue there. That's what they call it, and that's what's there. And that's really the issue there. It ain't just about oil. So they're not going to leave those guys just out there hanging out there. So the Afghanistan thing is going to go on for a while. It's just, you know, that's what Obama has inherited. And so people can say, well, you know, I don't like the way the war is going. It just doesn't matter. They're not going to leave those people out there like that. You know, what was that movie, Saving Private Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Think of it that 3 or 4 times over.
And going to send more in.
And going to send more in to they figure out who's where, telling what, doing what, yada, yada, yada. That's the aspect version of it. That's why we really are there. Because that's there's no other point of view that they bring out. And these people come on TV shows talking about they don't know why we're there. They know why we're there, Bob. George Will knows why we're there. You know, he's so, like, freaking turncoat nice. Oh, you know.
And bear in mind, George Will never would have said that if Grumpy McCain was in office.
Yeah, but they know why we're there. My point is, Charles Krauthammer, all these people, they know why we're there. If you go back and read some of their speech, their little commentary while Bush was in office, they said the same thing, the same things I told you. You know, that's what I just said right now. They said, and when I read it, I said, yep, that's what my friends, my cousin have said it as well. So they are right. The problem was the Iraq war was the problem. So I'm just saying this thing is such a bigger mess than I think, than me personally, I understand. And I just think sometimes we...
Okay, so let me put the question to you that basically brings this all full circle. Understanding your position, Gary, and I think I do, coming out of the speech Wednesday, what action do you want to see? And understanding that some of this is Congress and some of this is the administration, what do you want to see happen? What responsibility does the Obama administration have in this, and what responsibility does Congress have?
What I would like to see is not going to happen.
Single-payer universal health care.
That's going to happen, but that's going to be like 10, 20 years down the line. That's going to happen. What's going to happen, and you're not going to get a public option as the way you want it, you know, that way I want it. So, but I've also come to understand that it's not really a do or die for me as I was a couple of months ago, because I realize in actuality, only a certain amount of people can actually going to be able to apply for it anyway when it first starts up. But what they're going to do, this is just what I'm observing, they're going to do some kind of half-trigger thing. And they're going to put such regulations into it, because really they're just trying to get past 2010. They're going to put these triggers in so that those triggers kick in no matter what. In other words, the trigger is going to be the public option. And it's not like some people saying, oh, it's going to be fake. No, I think that this is my opinion on it. I'm just saying, I'm not saying it's absolute. But I think that's what you're going to end up with, because it gives the Blue Dogs the political cover to get reelected, you know, whatever, in their district. They're nervous. And it gives Obama the authority to push that the trigger option if he gets reelected, and to go full-fledged with the public option, and then go, you know, in the 2016, we go ahead towards single health, single payer. Because if once the public option is in it, everybody's going to start. They're going to start just looking at it. Everybody's going to go into it. We know that. That's why Republicans are fighting so hard. It's going to destroy the insurance agency.
Well, will you pardon me while I say that I don't mind if the for-profit insurance industry gets destroyed? I mean, I really don't. Because, you know, things that are essential to human survival. Things that are essential to human survival, water, clean air, you know, the basics, and I'd include access to realistic medical care among those basics, should not be subjected to the profit motive.
Okay, do you have family members who work for pharma?
Nope.
I do. Do you have family members who work for any insurance companies?
Nope.
Okay. Last night I was talking to my aunt, and I just wasn't thinking, I don't know why, but I went into this rant about insurance companies because I get really pissed off with them like you. And I said, what do they do? What do they do? They do nothing. And then she starts, you know, she's kind of backed up. She said, well, you know, she said, you know, I sell insurance. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm thinking to myself, you know, why I said that. you know, but I guess my
but that but Gary, that's the same question that we face here in Appalachia, only different. You know, a day doesn't go by when some guy who's actively involved in blowing up mountains because they give him $65,000 a year to do it says, well, if you stop mountain removal, how am I going to feed my family?
Yeah, and that's what my aunt pretty much probably would be saying to me.
And the, and
smooth that over.
Well, the way you start, how can I put this?
That's my point.
I don't know. Well, no, there's an answer. That's the whole point. There is an answer, Gary, and that is that we stop living in the present and we start thinking about the future. Okay. First of all these there are the bureaucracies set up within the insurance industry that can be converted and are useful. The people, you know, we're not just going to go out and hire a whole bunch of new people to administer a public option or a national single-payer health care. What we're going, the people who are going to wind up getting hurt are the CEOs and the major high-level bloodsuckers in the insurance industry. The people who know about how the process works and how you move the provision through the system, they're going to have work. It's the same thing here in Appalachia. Those D9 caterpillars go in reverse, Gary. You know, we could if we publicly funded the reclamation of the Appalachian Mountains, the ones that the coal companies have destroyed and have left as barren moonscapes, because less than 3% of all Appalachian mountains that have been blown up have actually been reclaimed, no matter what the coal companies say. If we publicly funded that reclamation after we end mountaintop removal, ending mountaintop removal has to happen first. But if we publicly fund the reclamation, every single human being who's working on a mountaintop removal job right now has a job for the rest of his or her life. And the same thing is going to hold true in the insurance industry.
But yeah, and I agree with you. Look, me and you, we always are going to the same place. You know that, and I know that. So the point is how we get there, you know, how we come to some kind of, I guess, consensus. So how do we get there? My point being is that when we have people show up at town hall meetings who are screaming and shouting, this is what I'm talking about. The American people are so ignorant and dumb that it takes a certain amount of time just to educate them that this is in their best interest. And that's what you're saying. But my point is, how do you govern that into, you know, legislation? You know, and I'm saying, I don't know if you could just snatch it. You just can't come out and say, we're going to single payer, because as you can see, these people lose their minds just over public option.
But the thing,
their own family, they argue to death.
But the thing is, they're not losing their mind over any substantive issues regarding the policy, Gary. They're losing their minds over ginned up garbage like death panels. They're losing their minds over right-wing congressmen from South Carolina screaming, you're a liar, from the gallery.
Yeah, well, Obama's a black man. He can do that, you know. White man get a pass.
Sure.
You know.
Right.
That guy should have been censored. They should have dragged his ass out of there with you know, George Bush.
Right, and hey, here's a Nancy Pelosi moment. They're in session. Or gonna be soon. Why haven't we heard about the motion to censure Representative Addison Graves Wilson, whose name isn't Joe? Why has that not already been filed?
Well, now I heard that she is moving toward doing something today. They said that, but then I heard this morning on some show, I think it was early, she made a statement that says, we want to move past that. So I mean, look, you know how I was about Dick Cheney. I wanted them to arrest him. I still want them to arrest him immediately. I think Obama and them should be, you know, all over that guy. And I think this whole thing about letting the Republicans...
Yeah, like a cheap suit.
Ridiculous. But the point, but by the other side of the token, I understand what they ultimately are trying to stay focused on. So, I'm not saying my way is right. I don't know your way is right. But what I'm saying is I think there's a certain level of practicality because the American people, Bob, you see it when in your fight, they don't use deductive reasoning. It's like they get hateful. It blinds every form of deductive reasoning. They can't say, well, if A happens, this is what happens to B or C, or this is how I benefit. They don't see it, Bob. And it's like we have to almost go through some exorcism to freaking get these people to realize this is in your best interest. You're destroying the environment in your own freaking community, you know, but for a job, when you can have a job and enhance the community, enhance your environment, what do you think is going to last? Do you want, you know, your mountains, do you want to come back here centuries from now? Do you want your family to be into this place centuries from now? Or are you going to be the person who said, well, it was a group of people here who lived in these mountains, and these idiots destroyed the whole place? I mean, I don't know how you get that through their brain. I really don't.
Well, and some, you know, it's Sue who so frequently says you can't fix stupid. And some of this, all we can do is put the thing in place and then provide them the better life and say, see, we told you. But until then, we're commies and greeniacs. And the same thing inside the insurance industry. And here's how it works, Gary, and I think it's important that we make this abundantly clear, is that just as the massive AstroTurf groups are using things like death panels and the end of and secession and the end of the republic and all that really just made up garbage to fire up a base that's really not the sharpest knife in the drawer, okay? So too, the insurance company executives are sending out memos, and you know, this go the little slips go out in the paychecks from the mountaintop removal companies too, okay? When payroll goes out to a Massey employee, from time to time it has this little note in it that, Massey just wants you to know the environmentalists are trying to take your jobs. Well, don't think for an instant that the paychecks in the insurance industry coming from the CEOs of, you know, whatever, have little just to let you know, those wild-eyed communists led by that one are trying to take your job. Well, we're not trying to take an insurance agent's job because I haven't heard anything about nationalizing car insurance or homeowners or the umbrella policies or anything where insurance agents make the real bread and butter of their money. But I'm sure that the memos are going out, well, they're trying to take away your job. When the fact of the matter is, you know whose job I want to take away? I want to take away Don Blankenship's job. And I want to take away the jobs of every CEO of every healthcare company in this nation. And I'd like for them to go and find honest work.
Did you see the article in the New York Times this weekend about the, they're trying to, Wall Street is trying to, use personal life insurance, you know, like, I guess it's the true death panel. They want to try to turn those into the derivatives or whatever.
Yes, basically, yes. They
what I'm saying? Wall Street is like a wolf.
They're blood-sucking monsters. There is nothing that touches upon the panoply of human agony that Wall Street will not try to make a buck off of. And the sooner we figure that out, Gary, the so much the better off we are.
But Bob, everybody who listens to the show, you know it, I know it, and you know people I know and people you don't know it. But there's still 50 million American people voted for Bush. Look, we had a very close election. Barack Obama might have, you know, won electorally, but there still was. You had a lot of people vote for Sarah Palin. Okay, that's what we are. So what I'm saying is this thing is going to be messy, and you know I'm not giving the Democrats no excuses. Look, we do have all the powers or whatever, but I'm saying that. You know, when we got a media, that's all they're concerned about is, like, you know, getting eyeballs and ginning up and showing these hot these faked up, ginned up, like you like to say.
Ponied up, rubed up, yes. Dummied up.
Yeah. Dummied up, stupid up, whatever else, effed up, you know, these things that they keep showing on the thing. Then it gets everybody on our side, I think, to me, a little, like, hyped up. And I'm like, look, everybody calm down. This is like rope-a-dope. We have to sit back. Republicans, I was going to say this the other night, and I was going to say it, but, you know, you didn't have time. I was actually going to tell you, I'm going to prophesy, that Republicans were going to make it. One of them was going to make an outburst during the I knew they were going to do it. And I said, I know they were going to do it. But here's the point. Republicans are going to destroy themselves. We don't have to waste all our punches, you know. We need to just make the right punches at the right time. You know, they're going to do it themselves.
I know, but you.
That's
know, but if you think of this like a 15-round heavyweight fight, okay? We can't all be Mike Tyson, and everybody can't be, you know, those glass-jawed opponents that he used to have. But the thing is, if you think about a 15-round fight, then You know, you got to land some punches in rounds 1 through 14 before you go for the knockout shot in 15. Because if it comes down to a decision in at the end of round 15, which would, say, be your midterm elections in 2010, or, God forbid, your presidential election in 2012, if it comes down to that, we're going to lose. He's got to land some punches once in a while. I don't think he's got to punch himself out, and I'm you know, I'm a child of that era, and I'm down with the rope-a-dope. I know what that does. You know, let the other side punch themselves out while you don't take any damage. But remember, all those fights where Ali, you know, invented the rope-a-dope, he was landing a punch here and there, you know, just to keep himself scoring with the judges.
Well, I guess a good analogy is he took a lot of hits. It ain't serving well in the long run.
Right, so, and you, I think you're
hit
you're
hit him out, right? Knock it out, just get over with.
Your analogy may be backfiring on you a little bit, Gary.
Well, I'm not saying. Look, I just told you that that's what they're doing. But what I'm saying is that the fact of the matter is Ali won those fights. But I agree with you. I don't want to take a lot of hits either. I would love to end this. I mean, I would love to stop racism tomorrow. It ain't gonna happen. You know, it ain't gonna happen. But that being said, if the Democrats. And, you know, if we were a little bit more organized, said, look, some of the people would just fund some political, you know, radio and talk, so we'd have some competition and, you know, whatever, bring back the fairness doctrine. You know, if some of those things would happen, we could land a knockout blow.
We could indeed.
Right now.
And you know what? I mean, and I want to be real equal opportunity about this because I'm so sick of Max Baucus I could vomit. You know, this guy sent the draft of his stinking bill to K Street before he sent it to the White House. What kind of disrespect is manifested in that? You know?
I guess, you know, being African-American, we've learned, and maybe sometimes this serves us bad, because I always tell people, I say, you think Martin Luther King was such a pacifist? I say, go get Eyes on the Prize, a couple of documentaries. And you see a couple of times when the guys hit him over here with a brick, and they had to literally drag Martin Luther King back from trying to jump on one of those white dudes, you know. So you don't see that face a lot, but, you know, the thing is that blacks have been learned to, you know, be passive about it, you know, do the whole, you know what I'm saying? So it's kind of in our nature, unfortunately, plus with the church and religion, because I tell people all the time, I said, look, I said, y'all better be glad we have some churches in our communities. Because they would be positivity. Because I'm telling you, I used to go. You, my uncle used to tell me that you had people coming up and they're ready to go. They were ready to just go straight off. But what the beauty of it is that, you know, like the Bible says, let your enemy sometimes reap coals on his head. Sometimes you have to just be a little passive, you know, and just take your punches when you know.
Oh, sure, and you know, let's remember that Representative, not really named Joe Wilson, is an old race baiter. Okay. From way back. I mean, he was literally schooled at the feet of Strom Thurmond.
Strom Thurmond, exactly.
Let's remember that Representative not really named Joe Wilson, among other things, excoriated Strom Thurmond's daughter when she came out and admitted that she was Strom Thurmond's daughter. And just before Strom Thurmond's family could acknowledge, well, yeah, he jumped the maid when he was 22 years old. Let's remember that he. Oh, I'm looking here. What did he call her? Let's see. He said he didn't believe her story. He said it's a smear on the image that Strom has as a person of high integrity who has been so loyal to the people of South Carolina.
Let me ask you a question. When you saw that, did you see for a second one of the look that Barack Obama gave him?
Oh, yeah.
When he did that? I swear to God, Bob, that was a black coming out.
Well, yeah, and that's why I played that. Yeah, and that's why I played that little clip from his reading of his audio book. You know, where he used all the fun words. Yeah, he ain't got. Yeah.
He got that look, a part of Michelle or something. I know that look. I've seen it before. Even Joe Biden and Nancy could look over there like, oh, you mother. But, you know, they had to pull it back. Said, okay. But you can tell, man, you know, and look, part of me would think I would love to see him just go down there and say that again. Just smack the crap out of him and just have a full-out fist fight right there and just everybody just go for it. Yeah, it's been a beautiful thing. But that's
why I was talking about the plains at Weehawken.
See, we're all tribal by nature. You're from a tribe back in Europe. I'm from a tribe in Africa. Let's just go back to that. You know? Just fight it out right there. You know, I know you. You know, you might have some brothers who are like got your pigmentation, but you know, I know you'll be down with me. So
yeah, no kidding.
Go back tribal on them.
Hey, look. You know, it took every bit of probably 100,000 years of my people being so far north up out of the sun before they got all the pigment out of us. And hell, I still got freckles, Gary. Yeah. But, you know, I know where humanity comes from.
Yeah, we all tribal, man.
We're all African. We just are.
Yeah, we're all human.
At one point in time, what would later become the human race was down to less than 2,000 individuals situated in northeast central Africa. And that's the truth. And every single human being on the planet stems from that small, small tribe.
Exactly. And trust me, I can go right now to certain places in D.C. or whatever, and I say, hey, you know, I'm a Steely Dan fan or whatever, and they'd be like, what the hell are you talking about? But then I can come up there with you and say, okay, yeah, well, you know, so I'm saying that, you know, there's no such thing as black or white. We all are just, you know, human beings and segmented cultures that kind of have kind of pushed us apart. But right is right and wrong is wrong. And, you know, that's, you know, where I'm at. So, ultimately, you know, I don't get into that. I mean, I'll be first to tell people, look, yeah, I used to be very mad at white people. You know, the black man, this is how we go through that phase. You know, but I got over that because I hit people like Bob, you know, Mike or whatever. I said, yeah, I can relate to this guy. He's pretty cool. You know, friends I grew up with. And started to realize, hey, you know, all white people ain't crazy, you know. Because sometimes I'm telling you, man, we look at these town hall, Bob, you know, we see stuff like this. You know, I hate to say it, man, but a lot of black people, you know, they really just, you know, they don't like white people. And, you know, it's just as much as you see the white people doing stuff on the side, it affects the other side, too. And it causes more division and stuff like that. And it's really, really sad when you have, you know, Rush Limbaugh doing those type of things. You know, because, you know, black people have a reason, a strong reason why they have distrust of the whites. And we always try to tell whites, look,
there's
a lot of racism in here. Y'all don't understand, you know, I know you understand, Mike and everybody else, but there's a lot of moderate whites. They say, oh, racism is your favorite. I'm like, now they're seeing it. And, you know.
Look, you know, there we were Wednesday night, and David brought us that brilliant story about that stupid soda for sale in the Harlem Walmart or Target store. You know, no, racism, I don't care what middle America says, middle white America says, racism is not dead, racism is not gone, it is ever present in our culture, and, you know, the question is whether or not we are aware of it, and whether when we see it, we move to stamp it out.
And the redneck is so mad at the Mexican, and so mad at the blacks. You know, the black guy in the ghetto who ain't got no job selling drugs, and the white dude probably out in the poor, messing around with whatever you want to call meth or dealing with meth. Those two guys are culturally really almost the same.
They are the same people. It's a process, Gary, that extends over about 400 years on this continent. When white slaves were brought to this country, they were given a different name. They were called indentured servants, but they died just as fast and just as low and just as hard and just as sorry as the Africans did who were brought over and called slaves. Okay? But from that moment to this, the first thing that the moneyed class did, hello, money people, you know, it ain't the black people and it ain't the white people, it's the green people that are causing all the problems here. They worked actively to make sure that they created artificial divisions between the poor whites and the poor blacks to make sure that they did not rise up, and because there was this Indian problem at the same time, and the poor red folk didn't all get together and go, hey, wait a minute, I think we got a common problem here. Old Mars up in the big house, he's where all our trouble's coming from. And
they make themselves into God. That's what happened. They make themselves into gods, like Rex said. With blacks, they use religion. They got us with religion. You know, they put you know, you better believe in that white Jesus, because you don't like that white Jesus. You know, you don't want nothing here on earth. Nothing here on earth is for you. This is for the man. This is for him. But for you, you know, the master guy, you know, you, your master, your true master, he got something really good for you. See, that's what he taught us. And that's probably a lot of times we're so passive to a fault. You know, for blacks don't even have their own businesses because they're so, like, even when I go to church, you know, that's why I stop my church. You go to church, it's such a passive. God, it's disgusting. I just get so, I just want to just jump on the ministers. Stop preaching that turn the other cheek stuff all the time. It ain't, you don't turn the other cheek all the time. You know, Jesus ain't turning. He said just turn it one time. He didn't say turn it forever.
No, actually, he did. Didn't he say 70 times 7? Isn't that what the follow-up comes when the apostle says, when the disciple says, how many times will we do that?
But he said forgiven, but remember, he said forgiven, but the person is supposed to actually come to you in a forgiven mode.
Precisely.
Get kicked in the dirt 70 times.
There is no forgiveness where there is no repentance.
Exactly. Even Jesus don't do that. Even God in the Bible don't say that.
And that's what we were talking about Wednesday. You know, that verse in the Christmas story, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. It don't say that. It says peace on earth to men and goodwill. Why do you want peace on earth for an asshole, you know?
Yeah, so the same thing with the Democrats. Look, okay, you can turn the other cheek every now and then, but you just can't keep letting the Republicans beat you into the ground. You know, so look, I
got to throw a punch. Bingo, Gary, got to throw a punch in rounds one. You got to throw a punch every round, 1 through 14, so when you get to the 15th, you can land that left cross and, you know, be done with it. Hey, Gary, I got to roll on. This is a beautiful conversation, though. You have a wonderful weekend.
All right, man, you too.
All right, take care. Bye now. Colin from Maryland, that's our buddy Gary. Let's roll it along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is this me?
That's you, boss.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Listen, I just was talking about jobs that I want to take from people.
Yeah.
I just got a very interesting email from David Sirota.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
How long ago was it that Nancy Pelosi said that any health insurance plan without a public option wouldn't pass the House?
Like a couple of weeks, less than a couple of weeks ago she said that.
Okay. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, for the first time yesterday, suggested she may be backing off her support of the public option, the government-run health plan that the private insurance industry is desperately trying to kill. According to CNN, Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said they would support any provision that increases competition and accessibility to health insurance, whether or not it is the public option favored by most Democrats. This announcement came just hours before Steve Elmerdorf, a registered United Health lobbyist and head of United Health's lobbying firm, Elmendorf Strategies, blasted this email invitation throughout Washington, D.C. I just happened to get my hands on a copy of the invitation from a source. Check it out. From Steve Elmendorf. Subject: event with Speaker Pelosi at my house. You are cordially invited to a reception with Speaker Pelosi Tuesday, September 24th, 6:30 p.m. to 8:30, at the home of Steve Elmendorf, blah, 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 Connecticut Avenue, Washington, D.C. PACs may give up to 5,000, individuals 2,400. Isn't that amazing?
Damn.
Again, Elmendorf is a registered lobbyist for United Health, and his firm website brags about to work for United Health on his website. This sequencing here is important. Pelosi made her announcement, and then just hours later, the fundraising invitation goes out. Coincidental? I'm guessing not. These things rarely are. I wrote a book a few years, this is Sirota, called The Hostile Takeover, whose premise was that corruption and legalized bribery have become so widespread that nobody in Washington, D.C. even tries to hide it. This is as good an example of that truism as I have ever seen.
Well, and you know what this dovetails with, Wayne?
What's that?
You remember, a couple of months ago when the news broke that the Washington Post was going to host a series of salons in which leading legislators would appear for a fee at the home of the publisher of the Washington Post?
Yep, I do remember.
And there was a huge outcry out of that. And it was suddenly, you know, oh, well, you know, this was just a trial balloon. We weren't really going to do that. We just wanted to see how people felt about it.
Right.
This has to be nipped in the bud. Progressive or liberal or whatever we care to call ourselves, America, Wayne, has to absolutely wear Nancy Pelosi out and make sure this meeting doesn't go off.
Well, I think that's an excellent idea. And, you know, well, we've got to send emails and the whole nine yards, letters, calls, whatever. But, you know, I mean, this is just absolutely disgusting. And, you know, this is, well, it is bribery. I mean, how else can you describe it?
There is no other way to describe it.
There is no other way to describe it. And, you know, I find it totally disgusting. And then, you know, the amazing thing about it, I mean, you know, the majority of these people are millionaires and all that. They don't need any money for their political campaign. I mean, they don't have to take bribes of their political campaigns, you know, in order to get reelected, but, you know, they don't want to use
Yeah, but that's their money. That's how they got to be millionaires, is by spending someone else's.
And, well, I'm appalled by her. I'm appalled by her and Harry Reid anyway.
I gotta ask.
Disgusted. I mean, you know, I remember, I mean, there was so great, such great hope when she was elected, and, well, hell, she hasn't lived up to any of it. She hasn't lived up to any of it.
No, she hasn't. Right. And you know, forgive me, Wayne, but I keep thinking that we're the ones who wind up continuing to be the suckers and the dummies in this. I don't know if you saw it or not, but after Representative, not really named Joe Wilson, made his scurrilous comment during the speech Wednesday night, lo and behold, his opponent got $400,000 for his campaign. People, you know, working people reaching in and $5 and $10 and $100 if they can, given to that guy's campaign, hoping to get that scurrilous thing out of the House of Representatives. Well, now Representative not really named Joe Wilson has a YouTube video up in which he brags about having gotten $200,000.
Right.
And so, once again, who's the sucker in this dumb show? Who's the mark? You know, who's the idiot going down the carnival midway thinking that he really is going to shoot that ducky? You know, with the BB gun with the bent barrel.
That would be us.
We would be they, yes.
We would be they, yes. I know. Is his opponent a Democrat?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope it wins. Or, you know, I'd love to see him win, but, you know, these people will back this jerk. I mean, the Republican Party and all these crazy right-wingers will get behind this guy 100%, and, you know. It's absolutely disgusting. I mean, you know, it's amazing how, well, yeah, I mean, just these town hall events and where Obama comes and people showing up with loaded guns and assault rifles and stuff. And, you know, people don't remember that there were two people arrested in Charleston, West Virginia for wearing the wrong T-shirt.
And it wasn't even a .45 caliber T-shirt.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. And, I mean, if these things would have happened during Bush, they'd have been jailed. And, well.
If not worse, they would have been torn to pieces at the rally.
Right. And then sent to Gitmo.
Yeah, I don't know if they would have lived to see jail because, you know, remember, the people on the other side are actual, you know, killers.
Yeah, they're violent people. They are violent people.
They carry guns to Wally World and up to my little convenience store to get a loaf of bread because Osama bin Laden may be looking for a can of clean peaches.
Right. And, you know, I mean, this thing is pretty perplexing. I'm a proponent of the public option. I'm a proponent of single payer. I think that's what there should be. But, you know, in the same sense, there's... Well, it doesn't look like either of those things are going to happen, you know. And how do you, I mean, you know, if this final bill does in fact have some of the things that President Obama pointed out the other night, you know, illegal to discriminate against pre-existing conditions, and that they can't drop you when you get sick, and, you know, some of, you know, very, very needed parts of this reform, you know. If those are in the bill, and that's what you could get, how do you, I don't know how you vote against it sometimes, you know.
Well, no, and that's the thing. People of principle like Dennis Kucinich will vote against it. And then there will be a campaign mounted against him in 2010. He voted against health care. And, of course, it'll be fronted by United Healthcare and you know, Steve Elmendorf and people like that, like you mentioned.
That it will.
But it doesn't answer any of the questions. You know, I have a, and I know, I think you do too, Wayne. I have a philosophical opposition to profiting off of the anguish, misery, sickness, and death of my fellow Americans.
And, well, exactly, and how could any so-called Christian not agree with that? You know, not agree that this is a moral issue, that people should not be allowed to profit from your misfortune or ill health.
But now, as is being reported by Matt Taibbi, is showing himself to be one hell of a reporter, Wayne. I don't know if you're reading him much, but you should be. You know, they're trying to turn life insurance policies into another derivative on Wall Street.
Right. Exactly.
Blood-sucking monkeys from outer space. I mean, Jiminy Christmas. I mean, does that just make you want to run around the room screaming obscenities, you know, little grandson notwithstanding?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
We have a crisis of health care in this country because we have a vast segment of this population, Wayne, that you know better than I do, is working poor. These are people who, if the fuel pump goes out on their vehicle, they're crippled. No more job, no more food, no more nothing.
Exactly.
Now, we're going to come along with a welfare plan because, in the end, maybe that's the way we characterize it, Wayne. What they're talking about now is a welfare plan for the insurance industry, not health care for America.
Right.
It's going to be a welfare plan that compels the working poor to buy insurance, to contribute to the
private insurance company.
Yeah, to contribute to the profit motive of the major insurance companies. And they're going to get coverage that's going to be, between you and me, brother, crap.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So there'll be a better plan, but you got to pay more for that. Yeah.
Yeah, and so now it's going to be compulsory, and the guy who was already having a hard enough time feeding his family, because, you know, after welfare reform in 1995, nobody's staying at home on welfare.
No.
So the guy's going to have money pulled out of his check that would go to the gasoline that would get him to work, or her. Or pay for the for-profit daycare for the children, or put a new set of tires on, or buy a new stove when the 25-year-old one burns out. Well, that's not going to happen now because he's having to contribute to the for-profit agony, misery, illness, and death industry.
Right, and therein lies the difference. I mean, even if we had single payer, he would have to contribute. But he would have a policy that would do something, and there would be no profit involved.
Right. The administrative costs would be dramatically lower, and that the cost to the people would be lower. Is there anybody out there that thinks that a health care plan that contributes to a for-profit industry is going to be able to cap costs, administrative costs, at less than 4% like Medicare does?
No. Exactly. Exactly. But I don't know. It's been interesting. I've been to a lot of these town hall meetings with Nick Rahal and stuff, and I'm going to tell you, I've gained some more respect for Nick Rahal and what he's done and what he's standing for. And, he makes no bones about it that he is for a public option. And, some of the people that he has to put up with, it's just, I don't know that I could do it. You know, I don't know that
without coming to fisticuffs,
right? Or to take Charlie Rangel's approach, which I thought was very appropriate. And I don't know what planet you live on, lady. I don't know. You saw that clip, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, Barney Frank?
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought he did very well on that, you know. But I thought the president did very well Wednesday night.
I did, too. Now I want to see actions fitted to those words.
As do I. As do I.
And I mean, that's not an unreasonable position to take, is it, Wayne?
No, I don't think that's unreasonable at all, you know. Not at all. It's about that, you know, somebody has to be held accountable for what they say. You know, that doesn't happen often enough in this country.
And God knows the other side isn't.
No, that's
true. So why don't we start a trend?
Okay.
You know, that's our side good. Will be accountable.
Yes, I would be good. But then what are we going to do with Nancy and Harry?
Well, that little soiree has just got to not happen.
Well,
I mean, if it's out there and Sirota's published the address on Connecticut Avenue, and there's not 10,000 people surrounding it with pitchforks and torches when it happens, then you know that's just another indication that this ain't working.
Well, I think we should. I will email. Well, you probably. I don't know. I'll forward this to you.
Oh, I've already. I got it. It showed up in my email. Our buddy Cindy out in the Great Northwest sent this along.
I mean, it just came through. It. I think it said 6:53. So.
Oh, maybe this isn't the same article. Do forward it. I haven't gotten to open it. I was just guessing by the subject line. Wayne, have yourself a wonderful weekend, brother.
And same to you, my good man.
All right, take care.
All right, buddy, bye.
Bye now. That's the boss man. That's Wayne, who takes care of all the details that keep all of this going on and started the horn by his own determination. Almost, the starting is more than 4 years old. But did you know that? We're coming up on our fourth anniversary in this iteration, this incarnation of what we're doing. 4 years. Wow. Amazing, isn't it? Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
anyway, yeah, I noticed that it's 9/11.
Yeah, it is that.
And this is a little quote. Let us renew our resolve against those who perpetrated this barbaric act and plot against us still. In pursuit of Al-Qaeda and its extremist allies, we must never falter. So what is this? Pick a person, plug it in as president, and we just continue on with the same drivel? That was Obama.
No, I knew it was.
Obama, who I don't, you know, can't do anything on his own. He has to have help from Congress, Obama. He didn't need no help with that.
No, got to wave the bloody shirt.
And,
because, I mean, that is what that is, right? That's waving the bloody shirt.
No, it's just, you know, it's like, who? I mean, we're still looking for Obama, whatever.
Osama bin Forgotten?
You know, and it's just sort of, I mean, at this point, I just had to shake my head and said, oh, come on, are you really going there? Really?
You know, I remember being a child. This is one of my weird little digressions, Sandra, but please bear with me. I remember being a child standing in the supermarket checkout line, you know, mid-70s or so, and I would see these National Enquirers with a grainy photograph on the front that says, Hitler alive and plotting in Argentina.
Yeah, okay.
Is there some little kid who's going to be a 10-year-old standing in the supermarket aisle in 2020? And there's going to be a grainy photograph on the National Enquirer of a 6'7" Arab in white robes holding a portable dialysis machine, you know, Osama bin Laden, he'll get you yet.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you know, the speech he gave last month to, you know, some veteran group, Afghanistan is a war of necessity. What the F is a war of necessity, Bob? What the hell is that? And I'm sorry to start my little conversation.
Well, I mean, a war of necessity is where some country with an army and an organized military structure attacks you, and then you attack that country.
Exactly. But he said that those behind September 11th are still plotting to kill more Americans. Where, Bob? Haven't we bloodletted millions at this point since 9/11?
I think we crossed the 7-digit mark.
Who's plotting, though?
Al-Qaeda number
two. He need to be more concerned about that Wilson raising all that damn money off his antic. That's what he needs to be worried about.
Well, off Obama's back.
That's what I'm saying. It's like everyone's talking about, oh, the opponent raised this, that, and another. I'm like, what the hell? I'm looking at homeboy, and that fool is raking it in.
Yeah, he did his obligatory forelock tugging mea culpa to the administration, and then immediately released a YouTube video saying, "I will not be muzzled."
Yeah, and please send me cash. And apparently, yeah, he's gotten a lot of cash. Right?
Yeah, 200 grand as of the YouTube video. Now there is some good news, because Sue did give me some background information. Addison Graves Wilson, because his real name's not Joe. I don't understand what it is with all these aliases with Rapig Lickens. Addison Graves Wilson won his reelection bid in 2008, 54-46%. And that's the closest margin he's faced yet. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to see him out, but, you know, he'll be replaced by a blue dog, most likely.
Well, it's just, I mean, you know, I was sort of, I have to say, I was even taken aback by that outburst. I'm like, damn it, you know, it has to be because it's a Negro talking.
Well, what blew me away, though, was the junior high school playground response by the entire Congress. Ooh. Did you hear that part? I just love that. Ooh.
Oh, right.
Yeah, what you gonna do now?
Right.
He knocked the chip off your shoulder.
What about the death stare that Nancy gave, though? That was pretty scary.
Well, I love the characterization of it as a death stare.
Oh, shit. I was like, damn, don't mess with her.
But then again, if you were listening to Wayne's call, you know that she was thinking about other things. That lovely soiree with United Healthcare lobbyist Steve Elmendorf on Connecticut Avenue in Washington, D.C. It will be a lovely affair. I'll bet there'll be a little chamber quartet playing Mozart.
Oh, is that the latest? I missed this.
Yeah. David Sirota just circulated that. Mm-hmm. First, she came out and announced that she might not, you know, we may not have to have a public option. And then an invite went around Tony Silkstocking Washington, inviting everyone to a reception for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi at the home of United Healthcare lobbyist Steve Elmendorf, and donations of up to $5,000 are quite appropriate.
Yeah, no, I mean, I am thinking, you know, at this point, how about we not do nothing? You know, except for the fact that all the premiums are going to double. I understand there's something, you know, but the way they're talking, I don't know if they're just not going to make it worse, you know?
Well, and that's what I was talking about with Wayne there. You know, it's the topic that you really originated, Sandra. And that is, if you take somebody who's working for a living and doesn't have health care because maybe their employer offers it. Let's say you work at Wally World.
Yeah, you can't afford to pay what they're asking.
Right. And they offer it, and you can't afford it. And now there's a government government welfare law passed for the insurance industry that says you have to. Well, where are you going to pull that premium from? Is it going to come from the gasoline that gets you to work every day? Is it going to come from your the power bill you have to pay every month? Because you're working poor and you ain't got nothing. There ain't no leftover.
No, I know. And the thing is only in this country could they conceive of a plan that's ass backwards, where you're actually forcing people to participate, you know, in their own demise, you know? Yeah, I hate to keep harping on it, and I hope I'm just wrong, but it just seems like it's bringing in more market share by law, mandated by the government.
And I'm sorry, there's no way in the world that that's not just completely ass backwards.
Now, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just, I don't, you know, it's like, I don't even have the, yeah, I don't even know what the hell to make of it. And I'm hoping that, you know, I'm just sort of wrong. And, you know, as far as, you know, Obama, you know, can't, you know, do it, and it's the Congress who's, you know, stopping it or preventing it, all I got to say is LBJ, okay?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I got your I got your brief email, LBJ, LBJ, LBJ.
I mean, and, you know, and of course these days, I'm sure it's a whole different world, but you have to be engaged if it's your own idea, isn't it? You know, it's his, I mean, Obama was the one to choose to, you know, take on this social engineering. Well.
Been engineer.
You know, get to it.
Yeah, Cindy writing in to say, it's called the VIG, and we are being extorted. VIG being, you know, a gambling term.
Hmm.
I know, and you know, I'm wanting so hard. I'm wanting so bad, Sandra, to see, you know, to see Obama spring the trap and all the Republicans fall in and we get a Congress that and a real Senate and we can start changing America in 2010 because, you know, they promised it was going to be 2008, but, well, it didn't quite work out, so it's going to be 2010.
Well, no, but what did LBJ say when he got the Civil Rights Act passed? Oh, we're going to lose the South for a generation or two.
Right.
And, of course, he's right. But, oh, well, that's the cost of doing damn business. This sort of, we need their idea and this idea.
Now, see, that's the one. Well, the comment about tort reform is the one that just drove. I mean, it was good speech. He does good speech, Sandra.
But no, the speech was fine, but the, you know, I'm over, I've heard,
but
yeah,
the tort right. reform thing?
No, it's too much, Chicago University injected in there, you know? A little bit too much for me. Too much, market, you know, Austrian solutions. I'm not feeling it.
You know, I got our buddy Matt Osborne has, come up in the world. And he's got himself, he's posting at Huffington Post now. Matt is, you know, I mean, that doesn't just happen.
No, that's a big, you know, big time.
And, here a couple of days back, if you just look him up under politics, Matt Osborne, Osborne, he's got a column up that says tort reform is a red herring, not a silver bullet. And he takes apart the tort reform argument piece by piece by piece. And just shows why even talking tort reform in the context of healthcare is nothing but pure, unmitigated stench unto the nostrils of the almighty BS.
Oh, boy.
He says, you know, there is simply no way that damage caps could ever produce the billions of dollars in savings that proponents claim. In 2005, the Congressional Budget Office determined that at most tort liability, get this, accounted for less than 0.5%. One half of 1% of health care costs, and probably far less than that.
Okay, well, let me tell you, the whole idea of doing this plan in conjunction with some, quote, tort reform is to make it easier to bring in all the poor uninsured so when they destroy them, there's no recourse. You know, that's just to make it.
Right. Yeah, you eat it.
Sorry. You know, they got to, like, accommodate millions more new people, and Lord knows they don't want to be sued, so they need to in our access to the courts even further if they're going to allow us to be butchered. I don't know, Bob. You know, I don't know. Yeah,
well, see, I mean, just because I know people who do that line of work, I know what real medical malpractice looks like. You know, real medical malpractice is where the idiot comes in and the woman has a lump in her left breast, so he does a radical mastectomy on the right.
Right, yeah, that's, yeah.
Or cuts off the left leg below the knee on account of diabetes when it was the right knee that had, the leg below the right knee that had to go. And then the guy winds up with no legs, and the lady winds up with no breasts. And some Republican out there, well, I mean, I remember when it happened, Sandra. Oh, my God, I remember when it happened. When George Bush referring to a case in which that had happened to a woman, said, and she's one of the winners of life's lottery.
Ah, please. Wow.
You know, where's that 100 proof? But, you know, but that was in conjunction with his statement that we're going to take the best ideas of the Democrats and the best ideas of the Republicans. And I said this earlier in the program, and I'm going to say it again. Which best ideas of the Republicans? Because they haven't had one since 1860.
No, I mean, he needs to channel that speech that you played from Teddy. Talking about he don't ever want to hear from the other side again. I can't get that out of my mind.
Oh, I'm in love with that because it's, you know, it reminds me of what we said the morning, the night after the election, when I said I got 5 words for the Republican Party: sit down and shut up.
No, but he keeps inviting them to stand up over and over again, even when they call them liars and whatnot. I mean, what is it going to take?
I don't know. Is there going to be a beer summit for this clown?
Oh, you know, you are so wrong saying that, but I got to agree with you. Listen, another topic I just want to hit right quick. I'm looking at this case that's going through the Supreme Court that they rushed in. Do you know about that United versus your citizens or whatever, versus the federal election?
Yes, I do.
Listen, I mean, what in the world? The media sucks. That is a huge, that's a nightmare for the citizens of the U.S., okay? They want to overturn 100 years of precedent here to allow corporations to just have free reign, no...
Yeah, whatever you want.
Whatever you want to do, you know, and Roberts is trying to pretend a corporation is some liquor store on the corner, Mama and Papa. It's sick. It's a sick spectacle, and if...
Give folks an idea of how they can get themselves up to speed on this.
Mm.
You know, I go over to Alternet quite frequently.
Mm-hmm.
The best description of this that I have yet seen, is over there, and I'm trying to see what it's a reprint from. How a legal case over an idiotic right-wing anti-Hillary film might end up destroying our democracy. And, of course, it's from Michael Winship, you know, with Bill Moyers.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is an absolute direct, no-holds-bars threat. You might as well just say corporations can vote now. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing, but worse, because... obviously, a corporate vote is worth more than you or I.
That's the thing. That's one of those implications that this case has, Sandra, that extends beyond First Amendment issues. This thing undermines the idea of one man, one vote.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's super citizenship. What corporations have, they kind of have that already, where they are covered by the Bill of Rights, but they don't suffer any of the consequences because they're not people. And this just sort of brings it full circle, this business that's being dealt with in the Roberts Court, you know, and that pig. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's a reason we call them the rats.
So he is a menace. And, of course, the New York Times ran an editorial about it. And I looked at the comments, people were like, well, the unions, and they actually responded. They said, you know what? Corporations have trillions of dollars in earnings and money. And they compared it to unions, which, yeah, they don't have anything near that. The idea that people are so propagandized to think that union power and corporate power is somehow on a level playing field is...
Oh, hell no. But let me give you an idea. You know, the previous conversations mentioned the stupidity of the American people. Of course, that doesn't include us. You know, we're a little more enlightened. But just to give you an idea, now this article that I mentioned is by Michael Winship from Bill Moyer's Journal. Okay, you can either get it at Bill Moyer's Journal, or you can go over to Alternet and read it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I saw it because I get updates from Alternet. Well, lo and behold, okay, this whole thing, okay, is about this case, right? Mm-hmm. And about the implications that it has and the unusual move that the Supreme Court engaged and everything that you've just talked about, Sandra. That's what this article is about. Now, I want to show you, I want to share with you the very first comment on the thread.
Okay.
Hillary Cattle Futures Clinton is an abomination, part and parcel of the cult of personality that is cultivated by the establishment. Kitties are more interested in the piece of yarn dangling in front of them than the hand that dangles it. Americans are likewise more concerned with the personalities and their emotive effect than with the strategists who work to create the effect. We saw her taking payoffs in Arkansas through the Tyson Cattle Futures contracts. We saw her create a hellish mess with health care reform that set it back for over a decade. Like Obama, she is there to shuck and jive, to dangle reform before your eyes that is so unworkable that it evokes tremendous opposition. She is as criminal as Bush, McCain, and Obama in the support of these wars based on lies. If conservatives are attacking Hillary, then they're doing all real anti-war progressives a real service. Who in their right mind would... Focus, people. This is not this isn't an article about Hillary.
Good.
This is...
Well, no, that's, you know, wow. Total
that
lack
is,
of...
That is the first comment on the thread, Sandra.
And
there are lots of comments on the thread. But, yeah, right. Forest, trees, you know, just me saying.
Well, there was one commentator I heard was talking about, well, it could be that, like in the past, the Roberts Court is real sort of boisterous in the arguments, but when it comes right down to the actual decision, you know, they get a little bit here and there, but... I kind of beg to differ because this has been played before. This is a huge case that he is a corporate. So I'm quite worried about how this one's going to end. I seem to be the only person that I know who's worried about it.
Well, you're not. I mean, I've read this and haven't had to... You know how it goes around here.
No, I know.
Nine dozen stories, and I wind up prattling on about my son's football game. But yeah, I'm an idiot that way. But yeah, this thing is massive, and it's and if you really want to educate yourself on it, the best bet is this Michael Winship piece from Bill Moyer's Journal. You know, among other things, he says more than 50, and this sort of underlines and highlights what you have said, Sandra. Michael Winship writes, more than 50 friend of the court briefs have been filed, an unprecedented number for a First Amendment case. The legal wrangling has made for some strange pairings. The American Civil Liberties Union and its usual allies are on opposite sides, with the civil rights groups fighting shoulder to shoulder with the National Rifle Association in support of Hillary the Movie's corporate sponsors.
Well, yeah, the ACA, you know, they've come down on that, On you know, as far as I'm concerned, the wrong side. I don't care what kind of tweets they're looking at. The corporations, if they get this ruling, they're not going to look at no tweets. It's going to be like...
You know, this would be a... And the sad thing is, if we had a court that was actually interested in setting things to rights, Sandra, this would be a beautiful moment. I mean, this is the moment, and I'm sure this has not been advanced by anyone. You know, sometimes you feel like a lone voice in the wilderness. Well, you know, that's me over there on the other rock. This would be a beautiful time for a court that was actually concerned with the integrity of the Constitution to pick up that godforsaken 1894 case or whatever the hell it was called Union Pacific versus Santa Clara County, where by dictum corporations were declared to be persons within the meaning of the Constitution, and clear that up once and for all.
Oh, no. I mean, at this point...
I mean, that's a case in controversy that could be properly before the court in this case.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying about just, you know, dealing with the idea of corporations as people.
Yeah, only a person has civil rights in this country.
No, this is, anyway, I just think that something that where are they coming out with decisions? Is that June when the courts come out with their decisions? Next June?
Yeah, well, by next June. You know, it could come out March.
Well, because the way they had this case come through, too, it was like, didn't they come back from summer break? I mean, what in the world? You know, what's the rush?
I don't know.
I mean,
Well, I mean, come on. You know what the rush is.
No, I understand, but...
The rush is to get this thing out there in time for corporations to spend massive quantities of money on the 2010 midterm elections.
Yeah, well, I just think that it just doesn't bode well for what's left. And I do say what's left of, you know, our access to government. It'll be over with.
Well, sure, and it goes hand in hand, Sandra, with something that I got from our chat room moderator Lottie earlier today, and it has to again, it has to do with judicial action. There's going to be a referendum in Washington State on it is called Referendum 71, and the state of Washington passed. A law that affords benefits to all forms of domestic partnerships.
Okay.
So Washington apparently has a referendum, not quite as crazy as what's going on where you live, but they've got referendum, so there's a referendum up to overturn the action of the legislature. Okay, so far. Well, an organization wants to know who signed the petitions. Because, you know, you have to get petition signatures to get the referendum on the ballot.
Usually real people, yeah.
It's handy when they are. well, there's been a hearing in Seattle in which attorneys for Protect Marriage argued that the signers of the petitions' names and addresses should be exempt from the public records disclosure law because release of the information would put them at risk of harassment. And that would infringe on their free speech rights. Well, here's the fun part. The federal judge ordered the state of Washington to continue shielding the identities of the people who signed the petitions.
Oh, come on.
You know, because we can't let the little bigots' names out. You know, no offense, but, you know, gut check time. If you're willing to put your name on it.
Exactly.
You bet. Come on. Is it just courage of one's convictions? Isn't that what that side preaches all the time?
Well, that's a bit special. No, I hadn't heard about that case. Man. Listen, anyway, I'll cut it short. I'm sure there's other people.
Oh, no sweat, Sandra. How was class this week?
Oh, it's getting a bit hairy.
Getting a little thick in here.
Well, it's only because I have, you know, four other classes, so I'm kind of a bit snowed under. So, but I'll keep you abreast.
Oh, do please. I anxiously await it, and have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
See you, Sandra. Bye. That's Professor Sandra calling from California. My goodness, you guys have a lot to say tonight. I hope you're still all here. You're not. You're not. You're not. You are. Hey, welcome to the program.
I win. You all lose.
David, you're the soul of patience.
Yeah.
He says.
Yeah, it's no big deal. I mean, I've been on talk radio before, like John and Jeff. I don't know if you heard that show. I stayed on there for like 3 hours, and they never got to my calls. I was like, and they kept checking and saying, are you still on? I was like, this show is 6 hours, for God's sake. Can't you get somebody to shut up? And they were like, yeah, don't worry, you'll be on next break. I don't know what the call was about. That's how much I forgot about it.
But it was important at the time.
I heard a great term for Joe Wilson.
Yeah.
Accidental martyr, which he isn't an accidental martyr, people. He's an orchestrated martyr.
Oh, yes, he is.
He timed you lie right at the point where he was to say it. He's been trained as an agitator. And I'll say this. I've noticed on liberal radio, people would spend hours and hours and hours on this stupid topic when there's nothing to say. You did the right thing. It was like 10 minutes and you're out or whatever. But there's people, if you keep focusing on him, they will transform and brand him into the man, into a maverick. If the more and more time you take to present the issue.
He stood up to political correctness.
And not just that, Bob. They'll find footage of Democrats acting foolishly in front of former leaders as well, whether it's President Bush or they'll go back farther. They have the archives, people. That's what I'm talking about. If you want to if you want to push this guy, understand there will be consequences for it. And you have to understand where he is on the totem pole. He's not really important. Just say, you know, that was really disrespectful and immature, but oh well. Let's go on to the next person. And let's focus on this. Did you know another person off the Obama cabinet was peeled off this week?
I've got that. Yeah, and curiously enough, what did I say? I said they got the black guy now, and I got him wrong. I got the wrong guy, but I got the right right ethnicity. They got the black guy, now they'll go for a Jew.
They got the I'm talking about the Obama aide, of course.
Yeah, they got the Jew.
The guy named Yossi?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though technically he's like an Obama aide and he's more of like a advisor or supporter or whatever you want to call it.
This was hip hop activist Yossi Sargent.
Okay.
And he is a 34-year-old communications director. And he is communications director for the National Endowment for the Arts. And, you know, that's been a humongous right-wing bête noire for ages now. Well, the National Endowment for the Arts, they give out grants to people who put Jesus in jugs of pee-pee.
That's only because conservatives don't have any talent, but anyway.
Right. True.
It's true.
But
they just know Norman Rockwell. That's all they know.
I know. But, you know, here's the funny thing. Isn't one of the board members for that Chuck Norris? Do I remember correctly that George Bush appointed? No, Lee Greenwood.
Lee Greenwood, yes, of course, Lee Greenwood. But here's the problem with it, and this is where I differ with Gary. Nobody came to the defense of this guy, and I don't buy that he just said, "Oh, I'm going to resign now." Who cares what Glenn Beck says? And he did it again. They came out and they said, "Da da da, Yossi has resigned." You're not going to say anything ever? You're just going to keep people leaving over and over again?
And by the way, just so you'll know who this guy was, everybody now knows the Shepherd Fairey, you know, hope poster, right?
Right, right.
This is the guy who helped Shepherd Fairey put those first couple of thousand original progress posters about out and about. The first three, he helped hand out the first 3,000 copies at a rally at UCLA. And, you know, it's not like the guy was important. You know, the person writing this article, Jeff Chang at Can't Stop, Won't Stop, he said that the Obama administration or the Obama campaign always thought that, you know, that kind of stuff operated on the fringe. And they only learned through the Shepherd Fairey poster and Yossi Sargent's work how important that really, really was. But what did Glenn Beck say? Here we go. Your government is trying to trick you using your tax dollars to change your mind. It's called propaganda. Because of the United We Serve National Service Initiative.
He got a mail Laura Ingraham. See, that's, I don't know if people know this, but that's how Laura Ingraham got her start, by doing those phone calls, doing a Linda Tripp on them.
Well, and
you
what?
You are a lesbian, correct?
Yeah, and what Yossi Sargent has said.
Yeah.
I think we can revolutionize the way that Americans think about art. And the article notes he wanted to do that in part by continuing to engage artists more directly in working in their communities. He was working to enlist high-profile artists for the United We Serve National Service Initiative when Beck started attacking him a couple of weeks ago. And see, there's historic precedent for some of this stuff. The Harlem Writers Project was something that grew out of the New Deal and the Great Depression. The theater projects that came out that gave starts to people like John Houseman, okay, and oddly enough, Orson Welles came out of the New Deal and the Great Depression, trying to keep artists working because even in the best of times, artists aren't exactly at the cutting edge of the earning curve, if you will. And there was just a feeling in the FDR administration that, you know, artists needed to eat too. Oh, by the way, he's not completely gone now. He's just been demoted. The NEA has said, as regards Yossi Sargent, he has not left the National Endowment for the Arts. He remains with the agency, although not as director of communications.
Oh, I see.
So they demoted him.
Okay, they demoted him. They didn't get rid of him.
But, you know, just to give you an idea of what Glenn Beck said about him, sick little junky freak that he is. Well, I think maybe I've got it here. Maybe I do. Maybe I don't. I may be. Oh, screw it. Not worth it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I wanted to talk about was, for those people who had hope and Holder, I hope you realize that's out the window.
What happened?
He was supposed to charge, people were hoping he was supposed to charge a Bush appointee named Bradley Schlosman, who lied to people about politicizing his choices for personal decisions based on politics. The former head of the Civil Rights Division misled lawmakers about whether he politicized hiring decisions. So they're not going to do anything. They're just going to let him walk and go free.
Bye. Best of luck.
This is why people like Gary and people like this have to understand it. You can't have a soft hand in this. I hate to say it. This is my metaphor. You guys can use it if you want. You got to put on the Dr. Doom gloves. You got to put on the Victor Vaughn gloves eventually. You got to. I know it's hard, and it's going to look like you're a brute, but guess what? It's going to get worse if you just keep letting people off the hook. Like what they did with Sarah Palin. They left her off the hook. Oh, she's quit. She's a governor. We're not going to look into her case at all. And the other thing is, for those people who think Sarah Palin isn't a threat, you better think again on that. On eBay, her dinner for four is up to $35,000. We only wish we could have that kind of fundraiser. Only wish.
Oh, I know a little about that kind of wishing.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So, and I mean, when Gary was talking about how, and it always riles me up because this is the problem, and it seeps through every person who thinks this. When you say the Republicans will be finished, no, they'll be finished. The minute they're finished, they'll drag you down and drown you with them. They'll drown everybody with them. That's when they'll be finished. When we'll be finished. That's the way you have to look at it. Because that party is going nowhere. Literally. Literally and figuratively, it's going nowhere. It's going to be here. It's going to be it's still going to be a force. I mean, come on. We have to get in the game regarding this. And if the Democrats betray us, then that's a whole other thing. And it looks like that's what they're going to do, you know, with the issue with Afghanistan. And I don't know if people know this, but Blackwater is gone from Iraq. Yay. But you know what people aren't talking about, Bob? How about this one? How about this one? Guess who has the new contract?
Okay. Okay. Clear this up, because I mentioned it in my conversation with Gary.
Yeah. Triple Canopy. Triple Canopy is in Iraq. And guess who signed on to it? People, you need to freaking wake up. Barack Obama and his team signed on it. And guess what? They don't play. They're just as bad as Blackwater.
Okay, Triple Canopy. Did they have another name?
I think they were one of the lucky ones. They haven't got investigated to the extent that Blackwater has. But they will be. And they'll probably walk just the same. My point is that Barack Obama took his John Hancock, signed his name on that, and let mercenary forces go into Iraq. You know why? Because that's the game of death, people. There is no change coming. I want people to understand that. There is no change coming when you put mercenary forces in foreign countries.
Damn. That's about as plain as it gets, David.
I know, it's true. I mean, I'm sick. I'll tell you what, Bob. I'm sick of people telling me that you wait and see. You know what it reminds me? I'm going to give people just a short story, and it's going to silence this. I say, when I was a kid growing up, my dad would always say to me, every day in camp, every year in camp, would you like to go to Disney World? And I'd say, yeah. And he said, maybe next year. Next year goes by. Would you like to go to Disney World? Yeah. Maybe next year. When I got to be 15 or 16.
You didn't want to go to Disney World no more.
Yeah, right. I didn't give a shit, and I didn't even care to find out about it. And I told my dad, you know what? It looks boring. Who gives a shit? And that's my point. Barack Obama is going to give you nothing because the people in charge right now, if you have those mercenary forces, the only person who is doing this, and I want Gary to understand this, go to rebelreports.com and see what he's talking about Triple Canopy right now. That's who we signed on to. That's who we bow down to. And that is when the next 9/11 attack happens. Guess who's going to be making even more money? These stupid-ass mercenary companies, and they're going to demand more blood. That's the change I'm talking about.
Not. See, I read the article and I screwed up because I thought, it's part and parcel as I read it. If I understood it correctly, David, it's part and parcel of the so-called drawdown in Iraq. What undergirds this really, if you want to get down nitty gritty about it. What undergirds this is the fact that, and nobody's really saying it anymore, we have a broken military. George Bush took the finest military on the face of the planet, and between him and primarily Donald Rumsfeld, broke it into a million pieces. So that, yeah, we got to have a drawdown in Iraq, but the guys that are the regular army guys that are getting drawn down in Iraq, David, guess where they're going?
Exactly. And so we've still got
a force protection hole in Iraq,
right?
And we're going to do that with mercenaries.
And to bounce off what Gary was saying about how these private companies are doing good down there, that might be. But the point is the people that are hired there, they don't give a shit about these soldiers in the private mercenaries, and they'll do anything, as evident with Jeremy Scahill's news story on Triple Canopy. Where, get this, a 25-year-old got electrocuted, not in combat, people, in his shower.
Yeah, trying to take a shower. I was about to, yeah.
Tried to take a shower.
Well, it was a terrorist shower.
Oh, of course. It was a terrorist shower. And they show the they show the compound where he's at. It looks like Club Med, for God's sake. I'm not kidding you.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, the mercenaries live large.
Oh, yeah, I know, but.
Yeah, we think so. I've been looking at the financing behind the Gang of Six, and it's real interesting. We got Grassley. Who's that guy from Montana?
Baucus.
Yeah, he makes Baucus look like a
humanitarian.
Huh?
Makes Baucus look like a humanitarian.
Yeah, or an amateur by comparison. Grassley is just 100% bought, medical and insurance, his whole list. Kent Conrad, Democrat, his number two source is insurance. Number four source is the health industry. Jeff
Bingaman?
Bingaman, yeah, number three, health professionals. Mike Enzi, Blue Shield, and Blue. We got to get something straight about Blue Cross Blue Shield. Blue Cross and Blue Shield ceased to be a nonprofit quite a while ago.
Okay, that was mentioned a couple of times.
What happened was the management created an umbrella private corporation and just moved all the assets right into that corporation, leaving an empty shell.
Oh, isn't that nice?
So that's Blue Cross and Blue Shield. That, They're in it for the money. So anyway, Mike Enzi, Republican of Wyoming, who is Aflac? Is that?
Yeah, Aflac, the guys with the duck in the ads. You probably don't watch TV.
I don't know. Who are they?
They are a supplemental. They're a supplemental insurer that supposedly pays cash directly to you in the event of illness or injury.
Oh, you mean like when those little policies that you buy at the airport?
Not really. A lot of Aflac is offered in a lot of employer packages.
Okay.
And what it's designed to do is to pay some set of cash to you in the event of illness, so that it's supposedly income replacement of a sort.
Got it. Well, then anyway, in terms of industries, I can't read my own writing. Something about medical manufacturers and pharma is number one for him. By industry, health professionals is number two, and insurance is number four. And Olympia Snow, David's senator, doesn't get away. Her number two contributor by name is Aetna, and number five is New York Life. By industry, number two is healthcare professionals, and number three is insurance. So they are all corrupt. This whole gang of six.
Nice racket, huh?
No.
And these are the guys who are coming up with the fair and honest plan to help America.
Right.
And they're all on the take.
Yeah. So we don't have a lot of time. Who's against campaign finance reform?
Well, the entire Republican Party.
And broadcasters, because these...
Absolutely.
You know, these are the primary recipients of the dough, as I see it. So
sure, because it's another case of that that thing where we say, well, you know, we can't wealth redistribution's communism. You know, as long as that's what they say about wealth redistribution. If you know some guy who works or some woman who works for a living gets health care. If on the other hand we're talking about the fact that political donations go straight into the pockets of the six conglomerates that can control in excess of 90% of media in this country. Well, that's capitalism.
Yes, and the bottom line here is, what are we going to do about it? How do we get the money out of this thing?
Well, for starters, and I realize it's symbolic. But now that this memo is out about Nancy Pelosi's little soiree at the home of United Healthcare's lobbyist on Connecticut Avenue in Washington, D.C., a real good start would be 50,000 people in that street screaming, oh, hell no.
50,000 people in her San Francisco street?
No, at this Connecticut Avenue, Washington, D.C. address.
Mm-hmm. See, I think... you know, if we look at Lieberman, we're going to find it, because remember the...
Look, Lieberman came out, a week or so ago and said,
there is no support among the American people for the public option, and that's why the public option will never fly.
I didn't look up his funding, but, you know, I live in Connecticut.
Oh, cherchez la dough, Richard, come on.
Well, we know that. I mean, he's a Hartford guy, if I remember right.
Oh, they've got an insurance company there, don't they? It's called The Hartford?
Well, that's just one of the it's the insurance capital of the U.S., Hartford is. And I hate to say it, but I'm a customer of United Healthcare myself, because that's the carrier for the AARP health plan.
It sure is. So AARP's not going to come out raising hell for a public option, now are they?
Well, don't know. AARP is, you know, United Healthcare. I'm just using them for my Medicare Part D, and because I have to have, you know, we got to pick something, and nobody can figure out Medicare Part D without computer programs, and you know, as of last year, it was the, one of the best values for my particular needs. I said, you know, to hell with all of them. But before I go, I want to share a little good news with you. Did you hear about Michael Savage?
Yes, I did. We talked about that at the very beginning of the program. And not only that, he was forced to apologize to Brave New Films.
Interesting. Now, you know, he's on a Clear Channel station here, but as you can imagine, Clear Channel owns a lot of outlets in the Bay Area. They've got 7 alone in San Jose, and probably a similar number in San Francisco. Clear Channel is in the interesting position of having too many transmitters. So one of them is liberal, and I forget the call letters.
Is that Green 960?
Yeah, it's 960. Anyway, in honor of Southern witticism, I have made one up, and it goes, Michael Sausage, the self-hating wiener.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Hey, Richard, got to roll. Going to try to wedge in a couple more calls before we're done.
Okay, happy weekend.
All right, and you know, hey, make a call to KNEW and tell them thanks for making the right choice.
Oh, okay. See ya.
All right, later, Richard. Bye now. From the Bay Area, that's Richard, and we got a couple of blinking lights, and we're going to see if anybody is on them. No. No. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, who have I got?
This is Garrett.
Oh, hey, Garrett, what's up? Got a couple of minutes.
I was just wanted to add to this whole Nancy Pelosi thing. The thing is that as bad as she is, she's insulated because Harry Reid, he's such a wimp. It burns me to think that I voted for the fool in 2004. And I knew that I couldn't stand him because one of the guy that he ran against was a complete nutball, and he wanted...
Oh, they count on that, Garrett. Yeah, they count on... Yeah.
Yeah, because he was like, I want the, you know, the marriage amendment. And what burned me was that Reid's response is, oh, we have DOMA. Reid is so bad, he's insulated.
Well, are you going to have somebody that you can vote for in the upcoming primary, Garrett?
He's got challengers coming out of the woodwork. There's been talk that one of Jimmy Carter's sons might be in there because he ran against, oh...
Enzi. No, Ensign.
Yeah, he ran.
Yeah, Chip. Yeah, Chip lives out in Nevada. Although I could see Chip staying out of the Reid race to take another run at Ensign. What with Ensign, all of Ensign's problems.
Yeah, but the thing is that that's another 2 more years. That's another 2 years down the road. Whereas Reid, he's weak this year. I mean, the thing is that Reid. It looks. I mean, even.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. In other words, why not take two shots instead of one?
Yeah.
Yeah, take two. No, don't wait for the one.
Yeah, because the thing is that Reid, it looks like he's going to lose because people in Nevada are getting fed up because our governor cheats on his wife, just like Ensign. So you got those two. And now you've got Reid, who's a total, you know, just the Democrats are mad at him because he's a total, you know, wimp. And the right wing is completely insane about him because he's too liberal enough. I don't know. Because as evidenced by the Las Vegas Review-Journal, which about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think, they did a short, very, very short little editorial. I don't know why I actually read it because I usually avoid that part of the paper because they're nuts. But, yeah, they said he needs to go to the center on health care. He needs to be more of a centrist. And it's like, they think he's too liberal. Everybody's mad at Reid. And the thing is, I think that if he doesn't get taken down in the primaries, he's gonna lose in the general.
Well, then all the more important to take him down in the primary so that when you know, whoever the right wing nominates, you know, whatever snake handling, strychnine drinking, mouth breathing, knuckle walking fiend they put into the general, you've got a chance with somebody decent in the primary. So, Garrett, cross your fingers. And I got to roll because we are at the top of the hour. But great conversation. Thank you very much. And have a great weekend. And maybe we'll have a little longer conversation next time, okay?
Oh, yeah. I'll probably try in on Monday.
All right. Thanks, Garrett. And take care.
Yeah, you too, Bob.
Bye.
Bye.
Calling from Nevada, that's Garrett. And I hate to cut short conversations, whether it's Richard or Garrett. But we're up. That's the end of the program. Do please remember that here it is, the 11th day of September, meaningful in other ways, certainly. But we're on our way to the middle of another month that is the continuing struggle to keep this program and this network going. Remember Guy James. He needs your help. Ben Birch needs your help. WhiteRoseSociety.org. So, I know it's a heck of a challenge, but there are PayPal buttons and snail mail addresses at every one of the websites. And if you have never contributed, this would be a great time. And our continuing thanks to everyone who does contribute, whether you be a monthly subscriber or someone who just sends as able. It is appreciated, and it is worth remembering that you're speaking not just for yourself, but for many who are unable to speak in that way. And just one more thank you to everybody who has done everything that has been done to help bring an end to mountaintop removal. You have the enduring gratitude of decent, passionate people in Appalachia. 79 permits stopped in their tracks today with a 14-day comment period. The EPA needs to hear your comments. You can go to ilovemountains.org/EPA-permit-list and learn more. A special congratulations to the people that I refer to as the bravest, hardest working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, who have kept up in the face of real adversity and are not letting up one iota even now. And they also help keep this program on the air. Thanks to John Fox, who will be with you Sunday evening, we hope, 9 p.m. Eastern Time with All Foxed Up. Great weekend schedule coming your way with Rick Smith and Rick Goodner and an encore presentation of Billy Shear's Night Sounds. We'll be back on Monday and looking forward to the conversation. Lord, I've got enough in the stack. I could do another 3 hours, but I just can't. It makes Ben's life too. Plus, of course, you want to go on over to MikeMalloy.com and check out the Friday night edition with Brad Friedman sitting in, holding down the fort for Mike Malloy. Brad does a great job. Brad needs to do a regular show. God, I wish we could get him to just fire up here on the horn. But, yeah, someday maybe, if we ever get money. Because everybody got to eat. So anyway, have a great weekend, everyone. Peter Godbold, keep getting well, brother. You stay in our thoughts. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Friday, and it is a Jim Dandy Friday here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, almost level and maybe not so level as it might otherwise be, Virginia. Yeah, we got some celebrating to do tonight, brothers and sisters. We most assuredly do. I got me an ice cold peach soda here to celebrate with. That's peach soda, not watermelon. And Ferg and I have already clinked bottles. Why? Because we have reason to celebrate here in the hills and hollers. Because we've got a new lease on life. Appalachia does. Stunning word out from the Environmental Protection Agency earlier today. A hold has been placed on 79 mountain removal permit applications. Word has been transmitted from the Environmental Protection Agency to the Army Corps of Engineers that the permits that the Army Corps issued failed to adequately address the downstream toxicity and the permanent damage that mountain removal generates, not just in Appalachia, but for all of us. It's a happy day. A 14-day comment.